Hello, everyone. It's Wednesday, February 15th. In compliance with the Open Public Meetings Act, this is a regular meeting of the Township Committee. The meeting notice has been posted on the Township Bulletin Board and website, distributed to the Hunterdon Review, Courier News, the Express Times, and the Hunterdon County Democrat and the Star Ledger. Before we go any further, I just wanted to, today's little remarks are the fact that on the 21st of February is our 225th anniversary of the incorporation of Lebanon Township. So with that, I had on me a bunch of Oreo cookies coated with white icing and are sealed. It looks just like that, and they're edible. So before you leave, I didn't want to hand them out now, so before you leave, just take one. And then the rest I'm going to give to the police and the employees and us if there are any left over. Okay, and then before we have the flag salute, we're going to do the flag salute, and we're going to have a moment of silence for the first responders, frontline workers, members of our military, and also for the people of Turkey and northern Syria as they continue to recover from the devastation of a major earthquake, and also for the senseless deaths of a Sayreville councilwoman and a Milford councilman within the last 2 weeks. So with that, would everybody please rise for the flag salute? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, please be seated. Karen, you want to do roll call?
Present.
Here.
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 Okay. First up are the minutes of the special executive session of December 14th. Oh, we can't talk about that. We'll have to wait until executive session to talk about those, right?
I think that it's okay. It was more of a... I don't know what your thoughts are, but it was more of clarification on the proposals that you had discussed.
I guess as long as we don't discuss.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. The committee's had a chance to review and is prepared to vote on it. Otherwise, I guess there's discussion requested.
And then that we would do it in executive. Is everybody okay with the amended changes?
Mm-hmm.
Can I get a motion to approve the executive session minutes of December 14th, 2022?
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Roll call?
Yes.
Yes.
Abstain?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. With that, we have the minutes of the regular meeting of February 1st, 2023. Any comments? If not, can I get a motion to approve the regular minutes of February 1st, 2023?
I'll make that
motion. Okay. I don't see the executive session ones here. I'm in my package.
That's why I'm hesitating right now.
Yeah, I don't have the February 1st ones? Executive session for February 1st?
Yes.
Not the 7th. The 7th. Okay, so it's the 1st and the 7th that are going to end up tabled?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so we just approved the regular meeting from February 1st. We're going to table the executive session meeting minutes of February 1st, 2023. We're also going to be tabling the till the March 1st meeting, the minutes of the special and a special executive session of February 7th, 2023, the special meeting of that being the Joint Planning Board Township Committee meeting.
Did we vote on the regular minutes?
I did not vote on the regular meeting.
February 1st meeting.
Oh, good. I'll second.
The regular ones, right. Okay. Roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay, with that, we're going to open the... Can I get a motion to open the public comment?
I'll make a motion to open a public comment limited to agenda items only.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Just real quick, I have Bill Bowen, Wood Glen Road. I have a letter from somebody who lives on Anthony Road, and he wasn't able to make the meeting tonight, but I'm just going to give some of the concerns, and some people may have the same. In reference to the agenda, there's a piece of property, an unfinished business. And he goes, I'm writing to you today to view my concerns. On the agenda is Anthony Road, the 3.5-acre piece of property. And I'll leave the name out and just say blank for Green Acres. The timing of this smells like rotten fish. The mayor pushed this at a time when a lawsuit was filed with an investor. I can't fathom the money he gets from this from taxpayers goes towards legal fees to fight the town in the lawsuit. This is unbelievable. That was his comments. I understand both sides of it. That's not, this is what some people are thinking. So I'm just letting you guys know. But it's open space. I understand that. And that's separate from what people are feeling because it combines the whole piece of property and stuff. So it is what it is. That's my agenda items for now. Thank you.
Lori Hoffman, Buffalo Hollow Road. I see you're going to do a budget for the appreciation dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Has it been decided if it was a picnic or a dinner? If we could maybe let the volunteers decide what we'd... I thought before we were doing every other year. It just seems now we've gone to picnics. So I thought
we'll take it under advisement.
Well, that's what I... You know, I asked the volunteers if you want to go back to that.
Anyone else? Oh.
Chris Carter, Anthony Road. I just have a question that I don't understand of the minutes that were just tabled. I don't know if I can ask a question about that, but if it's something that already happened and there were minutes being taken, I'm not. What does that mean to table that?
They're not ready for us to approve at this point in time.
And why would that be?
Because they're not ready. They're not prepared.
They get drafted off of the recording, mm-hmm. and other events took over. So
okay.
Not, mm-hmm. They're not processed yet.
We have a time frame that we can get them done in. You know, you can't go – when you're getting past 5 minutes or 5 months, that's a problem. But we have time to – if we need to table things, we can do it by law.
Okay. So it's not any issues?
No.
Okay.
No.
I just – that's what I wanted to
know. No, thanks. It's a good question. Anyone else? Okay. Seeing no more public comment on agenda items only, can I get a motion to close public comment?
Make a motion to close public comment.
Second.
Roll call?
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay, with that, we're going to go right into the public hearing for ordinance number 2023-02, which is the floodplain management plan, which replaces the floodplain damage ordinance. So, can I get a motion to open the public hearing on ordinance number 2023-02?
Is there going to be committee discussion before the public comments, or are we going straight to public comments?
I'm opening the public hearing, so if you want to have discussion first, if anybody wants to have it.
When would I be able to ask some questions to the engineer, or was he going to give
Well, that's what I figured. I'd turn it over to him, but if you want to ask your questions first, that's fine, too. So, we'll just open it to the public hearing and you can ask your questions during a public hearing, unless that's improper procedure.
Oh, that's okay.
That would be lovely to do that.
Yeah.
So make a motion to open a public comment.
Public hearing.
Second.
Roll call?
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay, with that, I'm going to turn it over to you, Osage One. Rob Martucci, our municipal engineer, who knows everything about this inside and out. And I did give him some questions. I was trying to make this so that we could focus it on the residents and what the residents might be asking and how it will impact the residents that are already in a floodplain versus not. So I gave him a series of questions so he knows, but he also knows how to answer them anyway, so it doesn't matter. But
sure. Yeah. So I'll just give some history. Last year, the township received a letter from New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection in response to FEMA and the flood insurance program National Flood Insurance Program, which the Township of Lebanon is part of, to address a revamp of the flood damage prevention ordinances for all the towns in the state of New Jersey. Basically, a model ordinance was developed in accordance with FEMA and the National Flood Insurance Program, plus NJDEP through consultants for certain areas of the state, one being the coastal areas, which south of Trenton, it's pretty much all sand. So, you know, we're up in the, what's called the ravine area, which is all the highlands and the mountains and soil and rock and stuff. So we were handed the model ordinance to adapt to the township of Lebanon, basically just insert mostly the township of Lebanon in this ordinance. And there were certain areas where it was the township's discretion to on certain sections with regards to fines and penalties. Township of Lebanon, the previous engineer, Theodore Baer, had sent this, drafted this ordinance, sent it to the state for approval, and now it's back for public hearing. Penalties were, we could go more stringent on the penalties or higher fines, which the township elected not to do. We kept the minimum fines as per the model ordinance. So that was introduced at a previous meeting, and now it would be the public hearing for it. So like the mayor said, it will replace Chapter 220, the current flood damage prevention ordinance. And what the new ordinance does is establish, which was pretty much assumed in this, but explained further in this. So the same statutory requirements were in place, but this, for instance, the floodplain administrator, under the old ordinance, it said the township authorizes a floodplain administrator. In this ordinance, the floodplain administrator has to be named, and the duties of the floodplain administrator were rather limited in the old ordinance, and in the new ordinance, I believe it's Section 103, it stipulates more detailed duties of the floodplain administrator. More importantly, the limitations of that administrator and what their requirements are under the rules to conform to the flood hazard regulations that have been in place since the mid-80s, I believe. Our maps, our FEMA maps currently are from 2009. I went on the FEMA website. There have been several letters of map amendments for residents in the flood area that had their, you know, had an issue with probably with flood insurance saying the whole area is flood hazard, therefore your insurance, you know, they have the right to look at that and say, okay, well, my finished floor of my house is way above the flood area, so I want a map amendment to not include the area of my house in the flood hazard area. And those are on file at the FEMA website. So I'm going to go through the mayor's comments a little bit in details, try to maybe answer some of the questions that people may have. It's a state mandate, not locally initiated. This ordinance, as I said, was a change of result in FEMA in association with the NIFP. To mandate changes. Also, as a result of Superstorm Sandy, a lot of the new ordinance pertains to Chapter NJAC 5:23, which is the state's building codes. So this new ordinance includes the state building code reference, and which in this case, it's basically open to interpretation. You know, gives the code official more, if you're in a flood area and you need to get a permit to do whatever's in this ordinance, it defines certain activities they may be subject to permits and or approvals from the floodplain administrator prior to getting a permit. So this model ordinance was FEMA, approved by FEMA, mandated by DEP. The draft ordinance that's here tonight is approved. The draft is approved by the state, so we could go ahead and adopt it. And then once it's adopted, NJDEP will require us to submit it, the adopted ordinance, for their records. So, new legislation, was this been in effect for years versus new legislation? The ordinance just, as I said, replaces Article 220. It does add a couple of items, like work in a riparian zone, which wasn't mentioned in the old permit, but under the statute was a requirement since 2007. So that is outlined in this ordinance, just as an example. Biggest new impacts to residents in a flood zone, just more detailed information, guidance, and making people aware of, you know, their protected area and what you can do to maybe mitigate flooding in your area if it's subject to floods. Biggest impact to residents that are not in a flood floodplain area, none. This applies to areas within the 100, 500-year flood, the floodway, anything that's designated on the flood map as a flood area, flood hazard area. Let's see. What in this template would cause the biggest impact to our budget? They do have floodplain administrator duties. I am a consultant to the township, so there probably would have to be, as part of your permit fees, some kind of escrow for the floodplain manager to review and carry that forward to the code official. Any areas of mandate where local officials have most control, again, the floodplain administrator was named as township engineer, that's myself. Coalitions forming to analyze the regulations and push back. Basically, this is a function of flood insurance and protection of life, you know, in certain areas, that we don't want to see habitable structures built in a severe area. But for the most part, I would, you know, I'm going to be, I'm getting on the county GIS, and I'm going to bring in the parcels and bring in our flood areas to kind of give a percentage of how much our township really is in the area. But residents that are there would either know or hopefully know by their, you know, by their insurance company asking for flood insurance. Lastly, floodplain are only certain areas. So I'm going to, like I said, I'm going to download the GIS data and just see what percentage of our township is in the floodplain itself. So, so other than that, the new ordinance, like I said, references the federal code Title 40, references the code 5:23, which is the building. It references 40, 49, and 58 with as far as site plans and developments. And then Section 101 gives us the scope and administration, which is pretty much the same with the exception of a new section with coordination with building codes. That wasn't mentioned in the old ordinance, but it's part of the new one. Section 102, applicability. For the most part, these are same information that was part of the original one. Sections 103, duties and powers of floodplain administrator. Again, the old ordinance references a floodplain administrator. The new ordinance designates that person and gives a lot of duties and requirements under the section, which are all outlined there. Section 104 is permits, permit required. Basically, when you're doing an application within a flood area, that goes to the floodplain administrator first for review, then it would go to the building code official, or if it was to the code official, and the code official determines it was in an area, then we would need a permit. Section 105 pertains to site plans. That's all really pretty much engineering, since Section 106, as a result of any improvement, it gives the floodplain administrator the ability to inspect. Section 107 calls out variances. These are specific to the Board of Adjustment. And basically, there are certain variances that are listed in Section 107 that, if applicable, you would be granted that variance. So, and then I have Section 108 violations. They do, they have added some authority, a lawful continuance, and with fines, actual fines levied against residents that violate the ordinance. Section 201 are definitions. They've been expanded quite a bit. So basically, a lot of the definitions have been added to pertaining to building code and certain other things that FEMA wanted to put in. Section 301 would be under subdivisions, which is mostly engineering, and Section 401 would be site improvement. Section 501 pertains to manufactured homes. Section 601 pertains to recreational vehicles, which were mentioned in the old ordinance, but they expanded on that quite a bit, just, you know, not having recreational vehicles parked in a flood area. Section 701 was added tanks, underground, above ground tanks, basically in accordance with ASC 24 and 7:13 NJAC. Basically, other requirements, 801 for other development and building work. Section 901 is temporary structures, and then Section 1001 is utilities. And basically at that, Section 4 would be the effective date for the signature pages. So that's basically the ordinance in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm. The definitions were helpful when
yeah.
I went to the back.
Yeah.
Sometimes they were hard to understand until you read what they really were.
Mm-hmm. So.
So with that, any questions?
Can I ask my question?
Oh, yeah, you want to do yours first, sure.
So just to help me clarify, the duties of the floodplain administrator, so
yes.
103.4, number one, says review all permit applications to determine whether proposed development is located in flood hazard areas. So as you described and as I understand it, a lot of things in this are triggered if you're in a flood area. But this sounds like every building permit has to come to the floodplain administrator to determine whether it is in a floodplain or not. Is that correct? The ordinance uses a lot of those big words, like all permit applications.
Mm-hmm.
So I read that and I say, if you live on the top of a hill that is parched and no water nearby, you still have to go through the floodplain administrator. Is that correct?
Well, I would say for the sake of permits, if you're looking to build an addition to your house or something that requires you to have a design professional, that professional should be able to determine and put on the plans not in floodplain area. Now, if the residents have individual concerns or questions whether or not they're in the area, we are going to be putting up a web page that will give you a link to the Map Service Center online link. And basically, this is very helpful in determining if you are in an area, because you'll put your address in there, and the computer will bring up an aerial photograph of your property or the property in question and overlay the whether there's flood zones or anything there. So something like that, if we put on maybe our permit application packet should say, floodplain area verified, yes or no, maybe something like that to avoid everybody having to come to, you know, because that would be a simple thing. If it is on top of the hill, it comes to me, and I go online and say, okay, here it is. No, it's not so, and I just stamp it and carry it right in. You know, there's no...
That's what I'm wanting. Procedure.
Yeah.
We'll need another box on the permit.
Probably, yeah.
Application.
I would say
does
for.
Does it have to come to you, or can it be verified online?
It could be verified
the
by
the code of the zone, and
well, we could even ask the code official to verify it too.
Okay, so right. That could
you
be,
know,
he can be designated.
Yeah, we could.
We have a shared service for our code enforcement
in Tewksbury. Yeah, but I would go ahead.
I'm just saying, give me a minute, because if you go to section 103.1, it allows the floodplain administrator to delegate some of those duties, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, right, so the so you're not charging someone for review.
That's what I was
saying. And you have it there. That's something that the code official could check, right?
Yeah, they normally do that. So,
jumping to that point, that observation, my question was a bigger level question, whether our floodplain administrator should be part of the joint shared service, because the agreement there is they collect all the permit fees and they do all the enforcement. We'll now have a separate checkbox that comes to us out of that. So it's just a question. I don't think we'll solve that tonight. It's just a question of whether the floodplain administrator would make sense to be part of the code official shared service, so that they're collecting the fee, they're administering the checkoffs.
I'll have to look at the agreement.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, so another question I had was, if you are in the floodplain area, there is a lot of, over the years now, they've pulled back on some activities, development that requires a permit. You can do a fair number of things now. You can put a new stove in your kitchen without getting a permit, as I understand it.
Well, that's
an example.
That never was a permit activity.
That's the point. It's not a permit activity. But now I read here, permits required. Any person, owner, or authorized agent who intends to conduct any development in a floodplain hazard area.
Right.
And development is defined as anything that changes anything. And that's what I'm just trying to understand. How do we... Where is the threshold for what has to be done if you're in a floodplain zone? I understand that
yeah.
if you're not in a floodplain zone, you check the box, you're not in it.
Right.
Proceed as we currently do.
So anything that requires building in a flood area, I would suggest the applicant hire a professional engineer to determine the extent of the flood area and what activities are allowed under what's called a permit by rule, which is basically send an applicability determination in the DEP. They look at it, they give us the green light, and you're good to go. Other permits could be permits by certification, which putting a swimming pool in a flood area could be, I think that might even be a permit by rule. But with the certain activity, the state, you know, these are federal guidelines, the state regulations concerning flood hazard areas, they've been in place for a long time. And that person, you know, would say, okay, so if somebody came to me, hey, Rob, I want to put a swimming pool in, I got these plans, I did a zoning plan, I did a plot plan, and I'd say, okay, you're in a flood area. That's allowed under a permit by certification. Here's the reference. Suggest you get an engineer to write you an applicability determination. That way, it doesn't kick back from the state as incomplete or anything else. I will not do that stuff for the applicant. They need to do that on their own, but they would do that. And then there's certain other things that are individual permits, which are very involved, and you're going to hire a design professional to do that anyway, because it's a very involved process. And so those are referenced in the flood hazard regulations, which are on the DEP website under, it's not called land use anymore, it's called land something, which when we develop our website, I'll probably put a link to that. So that if somebody says, okay, I'm in a flood area, I want to do a swimming pool, let me click on this link. I can read through the booklet. It's about 300 pages, but if they want to do the reading themselves and say, okay, this is allowed, as long as I stay 25 feet away from the bank, do this, do that, you know, that can all be done. So
going down to what I was talking about, so things that currently don't require a permit, like putting a new stove in, you might do it yourself. Don't need a permit. Under this reading, it would say if you're in a floodplain zone, you do need a permit.
No.
You don't.
No.
So
you're...
We're not changing the threshold of what requires a permit if you're in a floodplain zone.
What you're doing is in this ordinance, you're identifying under the building code, you're defining what is a renovation, what is normal maintenance.
It's already outside of this ordinance, you're saying.
Well, it's mentioned in this ordinance.
Right.
It's referenced in. So, you know, if somebody says, okay, I want to change a stove, well, under title 523, that's maintenance.
Okay.
You know, you want to do a percentage of your home, you want to renovate. Well, that's a renovation. That's a code official call, too. You know, they may say, well, you don't need a building permit, or you do need a building permit. So
under 104.1,
right,
permit required for anything, that's not. You
we
can't read this in isolation. You have to read the rest of it to get that. Okay.
We can designate the code official for certain permits. And the more involved ones, it's probably best to have a township person, it doesn't have to be me, to have just another level of review, because we're on the hook if we buy, you know, we're also, if we give the go-ahead and they do it, you know, we don't want to be responsible, you know, we want to make sure we do our due diligence on that end.
Last clarification question. There are a number of things in here that are not allowed if you're in the floodplain zone, like your fencing has to be a certain style so things can flow through, no above-ground swimming pools, etc. Is there any requirement to become compliant if you live in a floodplain zone, or only, say, when you put in a new fence that you would trigger the new fence requirements? Because I also read that the floodplain administrator has to survey the town at some regular intervals to look for violations.
Well, something put in before 2007 is not enforceable.
Okay.
So if a chain link fence that existed in a floodway on, you know, that's, I, you know, but if somebody wants to, say, put a new chain link fence in, okay, well, it needs to be, according to this, you got to have board on board.
But nobody's going to have to go back until they're ready to put a new fence in.
Right.
For example, we're not making people comply with the current fence rules that are in here.
No. Okay. I would not. I'm not on effect. I'm not a, you know, I got better things
that's
to do with my time than look for violations, you know. So.
All right, thank you.
I would not do that anyway, so.
The only question I had was about, you know, if you're not already in a flood zone, for example, then it doesn't apply. But what about if you're in you have a riparian brook on your property? Is that going to be on that GIS map as a flood zone on your property? I mean, even if you don't need flood insurance?
Well, they, and it's the, to determine the riparian zone is a function of the class of the stream. So mm-hmm. Spruce Run, I'm not sure if it's a Category 1 water.
Yeah,
I think it is, right?
Yeah,
so that's a 300-foot riparian zone.
Mm-hmm.
And those permits, unfortunately, are individual permits. And that has been around since 2007.
Mm.
Now, this ordinance brings it to light. That wasn't mentioned in the previous one, but, you know, as an engineer, if I'm tasked with doing, you know, like a pool and a cabana or something, you know, by a stream, and it's a Cat 1, under my licensure, I have to notify the client, yeah, you're in a riparian zone, so we do need to have an individual permit for that.
Mm-hmm.
They do list streams in that book I was talking about. They do list the Cat 1 streams, so if you see that, you know, and then it gets pretty cumbersome, because then it's not only the stream itself, but then it's the tributaries that feed to that stream. That if that's a cat, if it's feeding to a Cat 1, then the tributary is a Cat 1. Mm-hmm. So.
Right.
I have a question also.
Sure.
On page 3, 101.5, it talks about ordinary building maintenance and minor work. So if we're in a floodplain, that's page 3, 101.5. It talks about ordinary building maintenance and minor work. I'm kind of following up on what Mike has spoken about. And it talks about replacement windows, doors, cabinets, plumbing fixtures, decks, walls, partitions. But, you know, I think about cabinets. You know, someone puts cabinets in their house or a new window. It has to be evaluated by the floodplain administrator through the floodplain development permit. So I'm kind of touching on what Mike's talking about is – Is that something that you can check the box and say, we're okay?
Yeah.
Because that gets into the substantial damage and substantial improvement, which is, I think, trying to be captured by the insurance companies. So that I'm a little confused that we don't issue permits in a floodplain like what Mike is saying. And when I read that, it seems like at least it has to come past you, and it has to go into a floodplain development permit.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but that's the way I'm reading it.
Reasonable degree of flood protection required by these regulations is considered reasonable for regulatory purposes and is based on scientific and engineering consideration. So, in this case, you would say ordinary building and minor work, stuff that doesn't require a permit, should it go through the administrator? I mean, to me, that doesn't make sense. That's an interesting point there. So, I'll have to ask about that.
I have another question as well.
Sure.
I like an understanding how a resident would start the process if they need to have a letter of a map amendment. What would they need to do to, if they are in, they don't have a base flood elevation and their property doesn't flood, although they're close to a zone that's considered to be a zone A, let's say, how would they start the process of getting a letter of amendment that their piece of property, as you mentioned earlier, was dry? They wanted to prove that. What would the individual have to do if they seek relief like that?
They would hire a professional, either a surveyor or engineer, to survey it and do a certification letter.
Okay.
That gets submitted to FEMA, you know, no more than 6 months after it's done, and that gets recorded as the amendment. And like I said, we do have amendments on file here with FEMA.
Okay.
Residents did in the past.
Yeah, you mentioned that, yeah. Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Just to follow that up, did I read that resident would have to pay your fees for reviewing their private engineer's work as well?
Well, if it's, a simple permit would be under the purview of the code official.
I mean the amendment letter, to go through that amendment letter process.
Well, there has to be some kind of escrow, whatever it is.
That's the point. They pay their own engineer, but they also pay
escrow
our engineer, you, to evaluate the other side of it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions of the committee? From the committee? Any questions from the members of the public? Keith, could you go up to the...
Keith. Bill Bowen with Glen Road. You guys brought up really good points. So, do we have a fee schedule?
Not yet.
Okay. Number two... There's large properties in town. So I think the way it exists now, correct me if it's wrong, if you're doing a building permit and you're building a house and you're 300 feet away from a riparian or from the edge of from wetlands or, you know, and you're further away, what's the permit process? What does that do? I mean, if you can show on a survey on the GIS, I guess it is, the map.
Well, if you have a
survey in the area of that.
So if you're submitting a plot plan for building a house or whatever, you know, your surveyor is going to, if you get a boundary survey done, which is probably what you're going to do, the surveyor is going to tell us, we'll put on the plan the flood hazard elevation, the references, the elevations, probably plot the riparian zone and all the other restrictions. That goes to me for review. I review it and say, yeah, that's fine. But we also have to go through Highlands as well. So that applies. So there's certain levels, you know, and I think I'm somebody's a Highlands person here too, right?
I'm a liaison, but
yeah,
I've never gotten involved with the permitting side of it.
Okay.
Our engineers have been.
Okay, so there would be that and the Highlands, and if you're in the clear, you're in the Federation space, if you will, you're good to go. You know, stay out of the Romulan zone, and you're good to go. Now, if you're in the Romulan zone, but you dry flood proof everything and you go through the permit process with DEP and everything else, and you're permitted. Again, I'm not going to duplicate reviews. Meaning, if the state's going to review it, I'm not going to go on top of that and say, okay, I'm going to review it on top of what the state says, because it's the state. You know, if they issue the permit, then you're good to go.
All right. So, are you
now the middle? Usually, what happens here is the in between. You know, the major projects and then the minor stuff, and then everything in between, where the homeowner, you know, wants to build a shed or something, you know, or a deck. They want to put a deck off the back of their house, but it backs up to a riparian zone. You know, you look on the flood map and you see that and you say it's a Cat 1 stream and you got a riparian zone. Well, you know, I review it and I say to you, well, you need an individual permit from the state and for the disturbance of the riparian zone. You know, it's basically a determination.
No, I understand all that. My point is if you're up on a hill and you're not going near the riparian zone, you're 1,000 feet away from it,
then
do you have to jump through any hoops?
No.
Okay. That's the main point. Now, when you get close to it or anything like that, of course, you're going to probably end up doing an LOI and permits and all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, wetlands is the same animal.
Same thing.
You know, so it's calling out. And I'm not going to mention names, but a township was severely fined for ignoring all that and issuing building permits in the riparian zones and the wetlands and all that, and they got, you know, so it's a mandate that basically the township has to comply with and enforce, basically.
The average person that comes in, say they move and they know none of this, but then they find out they're in a flood zone, they have flood insurance, and they're like, I don't even know what to do. Are there checklists that they – what is the first stop for that person?
What we'll do is we'll make the website interactive enough that, good. You know, if somebody has a question, if they want to call the township or my name and number is on the web the directory, mm-hmm. you know, you could ask me questions. Mm-hmm. And then I can, you know, I can pull up the map, maybe send you a screenshot of the map of your area, look at the cat, you know, do stuff like that. And I, for a phone call, I'm not going to give you a $300 bill. I'm just going to look it up as we're talking. And if it's a 5-minute conversation, that's that, you know. And you may not like what I have to say, but I'll give you the information that I have available. Or the website is good enough that you can navigate through it and do your own homework and say, hey, Rob, I don't need you because I'm out of the, like you said, I'm up on the hill. And I'm like, I have a GIS of the township that shows all the flood areas, and I say, yeah, you're right, good to go. No.
Are we having any problems, and this might be overreaching, to when a CO is issued, when somebody buys a house and the CO is issued? I guess they have to do an application with Kim or something. They come in and there's some CO, we're buying a new house. Do we need to, and people get in the house and say, I didn't know I had these issues. Is that anything that needs to be addressed or not really, because let the buyer beware?
Is it disclosure? During a real sale?
Has to be. I get a lot of horror stories for that in my business, you know, where people come in and say, hey, I bought this lot. And then I look it up on, the first thing I do is go to, there's a New Jersey GeoWeb that shows you all the Romulan zones of the lot. And you turn on certain layers of this website and it just, you get multiple colors on your lot. You're like, geez, this thing can't be more than a park, you know. So it's a lot of to do outreach and education. I mean, we need to make sure that everybody that they do know what they're buying. I mean, definitely.
Is that part of, I don't know if that's part of the real estate process, or is that part of when somebody gets a CO here? You know, they have to come in and get a CO from Kim, I believe. No, before somebody new buying a house.
Well, do you have a resale? Do you have a resale inspection?
Just for fire inspection and well test.
Right. So there's no resale. But typically, if it's a residential sale, most of the New Jersey realtors' contracts, which are pretty uniform now throughout the state, there's a flood hazard provision in it. And if you're going to get a title company, the title companies do a search, right? And they check the flood maps. But one of the provisions in most uniform residential real estate contracts is a provision whether or not the property is in a flood zone. So obviously, you know, if you're worried about that, then you have to make sure you have that. If you don't use an attorney, not to say everybody's honest, but hopefully they are.
Yeah. Just like radon and every
correct.
Other thing on the checklist.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Could I just develop? Am I correct? Section 801.2, new construction and substantial improvements. E under that it says all new construction, substantial improvements. Da da da. 7 below that says have documentation that deed restriction has been obtained for the lot if the enclosure is greater than 6 feet high. Da da. The deed restriction must explain and disclose that the enclosure is likely to be inundated by floodwaters, which may result in damage and/or inconvenience, the depth of the flooding. So, my understanding is for new construction or substantial improvements, this triggers a deed notice, deed restriction.
Yeah, I wasn't sure.
Under 801.2, did you say, Mike?
801.2.
Mm-hmm. Page 1.
So that's, that's
page 30. 30.
That applies if you're in an A zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, right. So, I mean, I think obviously where you are, depending on, and if you're, right.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's going to be requirements for sure, additional requirements on top of that.
But so right, that. How will going forward, new buyers would know if it's
new construction
or substantial improvement.
Yeah,
new,
50%. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's a little bit easier. I think the existing residents a little more difficult.
Yeah.
Now, who's
because a lot of those, I'm sorry, a lot of those, if they're older, the flood maps have changed over the years, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, some people, when they first had their house, they weren't in a flood zone and over the years, then they became in a flood zone.
Who's going to issue the deed restriction? Like, I know we do it at the Board of Health meetings, but what happens?
My assumption is the attorneys that are selling and buying the property will look at the ordinance and see that it's a requirement. If they're in the flood zone, then mm-hmm. they'll look at more in-depth mm-hmm. issues. Although I guess in this case, if you do a substantial improvement, you're not buying and selling your mm-hmm. property. We have to tell them that you must file a deed restriction.
Yeah.
Get an attorney to file a new deed.
And under certain permits through the state, you are required to file deed restrictions as well.
On the wetlands, right?
That's a condition of your permit. You know, the state wants to make they need a stamp from the county clerk that the deed restriction was filed. Mm-hmm. In that case, you know, if you get a new house and for some reason you want to live in a flood zone, like underwater, you know, the deed restriction has to be there. I mean, you know, and again, say it, but you see what Sandy did to a lot of these areas, and it's a shame. You know, it's definitely very, you know, serious, very serious to do, make sure that life is protected here. So.
Mm-hmm. So, any last words of advice to the public if you're going to do anything?
Well, I would visit the website. If anybody has any questions, if they have general questions, they could call me and, you know, again, I won't get as deep, you know, I can't do a real detailed analysis, but I could probably answer your concern or at least point you in the right direction. And then the website will work to make that more interactive, and it'll be a process, you know, the trial and error. If something doesn't work, we'll change it.
Is that up now? Is that the website up?
We're working on it.
We're working on it. Okay. Any estimated time?
The website he's going to reach out to me.
Oh, okay. So you've got, it's our website you're talking about. Okay.
Yeah,
I thought you had a separate one going. Okay. No, I get it.
So we'll have, right. on that website, we'll have links to certain areas, mm-hmm. and then we'll put some verbiage in mm-hmm. based on the ordinance here, you know.
Okay.
I had one question. Keith Galloway, Mount Lebanon Road. You said section 1001. You just mentioned utilities. Could you define what you meant by utilities?
Now my pages are now all screwed up.
You're looking at definitions, maybe. Let's see.
Bear with me for a second here.
Oh, I know. Okay.
Tanks, 801. Utilities, okay. Miscellaneous group U. So U's would be, under the building code, would be like buildings and structures that are not classified as any specific occupancy in the building code. So you're talking about agricultural buildings, aircraft, hangars, barns, carports, communication equipment structures, gross floor area not less than 1,500 square feet, fences more than 6 foot high, grain silos. So basically anything,
accessory,
anything that doesn't classify under the building code.
As a primary.
Thank you.
Paul Gamm, Lance Drive. So you made a point earlier about the flood maps themselves are from 2009.
Mm-hmm.
So those are a 2D, two-dimensional projection down onto the globe. So if you're not in a flood zone now, you're not really going to be in a flood zone later because they're not redrawing the maps, my understanding.
Oh, really?
They're only, my understanding is they're only changing the design criteria for what's the height above the first, what's the first finished floor elevation above the 1-in-100-year flood height.
Okay. I'm not privy to that. I just look at the, what is effective. The effective date of the maps, that's basically what I'm referencing.
Okay, so that's my. So I don't know the answer to that either. That was just the way that I read it and assumed it. So,
mm-hmm.
that gets to kind of the three triggers of how you get pulled into this scenario, right, as a resident. The one being that you talked about of a flood determination that's made by First American or some title company as you're buying a new house, which... Mm-hmm. Through that process, once you got to go sign your papers, theoretically, if First American does their job, they're going to show you that you're in a flood zone or not. And at that point, you'd be like, you know, upset or happy or, you know, anywhere in between.
Mm-hmm.
But the other components are, again, substantial improvement or substantial damage requiring a permit. And it seems as it notates, right, that there are... you know, as long as you don't, that there's a UCC kind of code that outlines those things that are not substantial.
Right.
Okay. So scenario one would be you've got an older home that could be in a floodplain. It's got older, outdated electrical equipment, and you're moving from fuses to a breaker box. Would that become substantial improvement, or would that be something that is something you have to fix for safety purposes or should fix for safety purposes that now all of a sudden now that draws you into it's a substantial upgrade that now you have to redefine whether you're in a flood zone or not?
So the electrical scenario first, historic buildings are exempt.
Okay.
So if you do have a registered historic building, you're exempt from these.
Let's say an old 1950s house that's not.
All right, 1950s. And it's the button and wire, the wire button thing. You would want your main disconnect above the flood elevation. If I was doing an improvement,
right.
I would want that above the flood elevation. I wouldn't want to put outlets, maybe GFIs in the basement floor. You know, you would build in accordance with certain regs.
Right.
Or if you say you want to put an emergency generator there, make sure the generator's elevated above the flood elevation. So something like that, if you're doing a substantial improvement, there's certain things that building code-wise, which would be under mostly an architect or electrical engineer's purview, not necessarily me as a civil engineer, that you would do to mitigate if you do have a flood. Like, for instance, down the shore, you know, you had an old brick block structure that was at an elevation, and, you know, FEMA's saying, no, I want it 10 feet higher. Okay. So when you go for your building permit, the code official is going to say, well, it's got to go up.
Right.
If you don't do any substantial improvement, it can stay the way it is. But if you want to do something like put new windows in or something, that triggers picture. Sure. And I've done a couple jobs like that.
Right. So, I mean, that all seems logical that you want to move it up.
Mm-hmm.
But my point is, does that pull you now into, now you got to get flood insurance. Now you're in a floodplain because it was that improvement that you're trying to protect your life and property from burning down, that now they're like, oh, sorry. Now you got to be in a flood zone.
I don't know if we register anything post, you know, like improvement wise as far as building code things. We're more interested in the you would get an amendment, like say you are in a flood zone and you say, well, my first floor is part of that two dimensional aerial thing, and it's certainly way higher than this elevation. So you get a surveyor to certify that the first floor is this. And
let's say the two-dimensional thing is kind of off in the woods.
Okay.
Right? But you have a part of your property that's going through the flood zone, but mm-hmm. it's not affecting the structures per se. Right?
Okay.
But now there's a new projection, right? There's a new projection that says, okay, your first finished floor is not above that two-dimensional cross.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have to go 4 feet above that. And because you did this substantial improvement to fix your electrical, now that affects how your property is viewed in the eyes of the township or NFIP or whatever. I guess, and again, I don't want to get too much into the minutia.
But isn't the answer in the definition of substantial improvement?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's...
It explicitly says the term does not, however, include any project for improvement of a structure to correct existing violations of state, local health, sanitary, or safety code specifications which have been okay. identified, et cetera. So, okay. like, electrical code would be disqualified.
Yeah, and I would... And this ordinance is helpful in that regard. Okay. You know, it puts a lot of things in... And again, I haven't memorized it yet, but,
okay.
you know, like you said, it's... You know, it does qualify in that regard.
Okay. So then I guess my last question is there, I mean, so obviously we have all these definitions, Uniform Construction Code, and hopefully some definitions that determine what are not substantial or substantial. So is there anything that we aren't certain about, or have we found any holes or gaps in that that need to be clarified?
Well, my land use instructor always told me they never change an ordinance; they always add to it. So, which is the case.
Yeah.
So probably it's going to be a learning process over that, and I'm sure, the building, the developers coalition does a lot of advocate work for it. You know, when they come out with these, if it does hurt development, there are groups that do pressure the DEP to, right. you know, this is a, like the one note, this minor work 101.5, you know, I have no business looking at a permit to put cabinets and plumbing for fixtures in. That's just ridiculous.
Right.
I mean, that's something that's a burden on the township and the taxpayers. It's just ridiculous. I'm not, you know, why would we have to do that? I mean,
I think it's clear that the items that affect the township are in this ordinance are specific to how those kind of responsibilities are carried out,
mm-hmm.
And how they're implemented from a process perspective. The mortgage piece and buying and selling, like, that's going to happen regardless of what you do with this ordinance, right? And that you can call your state government and complain about that, or call FEMA and complain about that, but that could be the flood determination company that decides whether or not you're in a flood zone, not in a flood zone, from the perspective of your mortgage company, which will drive the insurance.
Sure, and that's basically the insurance cost. I mean, it's very costly, too.
Sure.
I mean,
well, and they don't want to rebuild. They don't want to keep rebuilding houses that keep having problems, so mm-hmm. that's part of the issue. Okay, thank you.
Yep.
I do think you hit on the unintended consequence of this sort of thing is mm-hmm. you make it more expensive to follow the rules,
Yeah, no kidding.
People, there's going to be less people repairing their properties.
Right.
And, yes.
And isn't that always always a problem with regulation, right? Yeah, when you overregulate, it's a disincentive for people to comply because it's costly, right?
Disincentive to comply, but also disincentive to do the fundamental work that
correct,
needs to be done.
Right.
And then the safety issues because right. it's just it gets too expensive.
And then the values go down.
Exactly.
I mean, my purview is solving problems, not creating them. So when I look at 101.5, I'm like, I'm not. Well, okay, fine. How much? You want $100, $50? I'm not going to look at somebody's permit to put cabinets in. I'm not. I mean, I think it's just ludicrous. And there's probably other areas of this ordinance that I'll probably just flag and for us to maybe, if I'm in a state situation where we are talking to DEP, I might bring them up and say, come on, guys.
Okay. Bob Meckel, Wood Glen Road. Just a couple clarifications for mine. In the ordinance, it talks about the Spruce Run Creek in three specific in that the chart, and it says SP1, SP2, SP3. What does that stand for? Are they... go ahead.
So to determine a flood hazard elevation, you could there's certain methods to do that. One method is it's called method one is a state delineated water where DEP goes out, they survey the stream bank and they do it to a certain area, the reach of the stream, and they publish maps of the 100. You know, they give you a flood map mm-hmm. and a profile showing the 100-year, 500-year. So those maps are available, and that's basically the map number of the reference. So that's a DEP, not a FEMA map. It's an actual DEP map.
Okay. So they could occur anywhere on Spruce Run Creek?
Well, it's to a certain area. So
okay,
the state might study up to Glen Gardner, for instance. I'm not sure, but I'm sure they're going to want the area feeding Spruce Run. They're going to probably want to study that and make sure... you know, it's feeding the reservoir. The state is interested in it, so they'll study that. They'll do the study themselves as opposed to the feds.
Okay. And again, the 300 feet, is that on either side?
Yes.
Or it is? Okay.
Measured from the top of the bank.
Okay.
So top of physical bank, 300 foot back is your, if it's a category one, that's your riparian zone. And again, how they determined that 300 feet, I hear a bunch of different stories, but none of them make sense.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Surprise, surprise.
I've seen, I did see a bald eagle on down by Flemington, though, on the Raritan River. So I was kind of impressed there. I pulled over on that one. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was part of the 300 foot or not, you know.
Lori Hoffman, Buffalo Hollow Road. So I was put under the flood in 2009. They put us our property under the flood. So I've tried to get an elevation certificate, and my Tom had asked that question. And you're saying that it goes from the flood, that they have that base flood.
Yes.
I do not have a base flood.
Right.
They stopped at the end of the road, which I think what you're saying now, when you were talking about the thing, the state only went up to so much.
Right. So the base flood could be determined using an approximation method, or which is method number five referenced in that book that where the permits by certification, certain
now,
methods.
What book are you talking?
Well, I'm talking about the flood hazard regulations.
So the regulations. So I only read the ordinance and all this stuff here.
Yeah, so the regs. Okay. Do you have a professional that's looking to do the certificate for you, or
I'm not. I have someone that did. An engineer did. This was years ago because I'm no longer. I own my house. So I don't have to have flood insurance.
Oh, okay.
So, but I've spent months and months. I have a file like this of doing it. So we sent in the elevation and told them we don't have that base, and so FEMA's denying it. I've been talked to the people at the county at the GIS,
mm-hmm.
and she's talked to FEMA, and they tell me that I really shouldn't be in the flood zone because they can't, we don't have that, or they should come up the road, and that's where it I just put determination payoff. I paid a lot of money for flood insurance. And my house will never flood. So I have the property, so my actual structure is built up on a mound. Behind that is a stream, and behind that of my property will flood, and that's Forest State Park. So for it to come up to my house, Forest State Park has to flood.
So using a state method for FEMA, FEMA's not going to buy it, basically. So your engineer probably assumed, did the approximation method, and submitted it to FEMA, and FEMA said no. Right? Yeah. They want a regular study done. They want you to
pay
the engineer to study the stream, to do the sections, and establish the base flood elevation through that.
$1,000, and that was years ago.
That's crazy.
But for me, if I want to do any of this work you are talking about, I have to get that elevation.
Basically, in your case, you probably need to just talk to me about it offline. Just call me and maybe email me some stuff, and I could take a look at it for you.
All right, thank you. And this book that you are talking about, can we get that book?
The link will be on the website for it, yes.
Okay.
And if you email me, I can email you the link to the book.
Okay. Now, you were talking about a deed restriction. What is that?
Well, if you establish the base flood elevation and you go for a permit with DEP, DEP makes you record the base flood elevation on a plan and do meets and bounds and put that in the deed as a restriction saying that, you know, there's a covenant on your property now where you have a base flood elevation that's regulated. That didn't exist prior to your getting your permit. So
anyone purchasing a house after that, automatically turn in onto the property?
That would apply to an individual permit. If you had to get what's known as an individual permit, that would be a requirement on the individual permit.
So if I go for this base flood, that I might get deed restricted?
I need to know more information. I can't, I'm starting to... Sounds like you spent a lot of money. I don't want to give you the wrong...
I've talked to the township engineer, and the former one didn't.
Okay. Hopefully I can. keep my fingers crossed. I played in the streams as a kid, so I don't know if that qualifies me.
Did you have a permit to play in the streams? Sharon Petzinger, I'm here on behalf of the Environmental Open Space Commission. You answered a lot of our questions, so thank you. That was very thorough. I do like that, or we like that you have going to have a website, and that'll give lead people more information. Is there a way that you can get this out to people who you know will be impacted? So you said you're going to kind of review the flood areas and get a percentage of the township. Can you also kind of target those landowners and say, hey, new ordinance, here's the website if you need more information kind of thing? Or
we are required, which will probably be another meeting, but we also went from what's known as a Tier B stormwater permit to a Tier A.
Mm-hmm.
So as part of the Tier A requirement, we need to do an outreach of like a mailer to go to each resident. And probably in that mailer or attached to that mailer, we ought to have maybe just a blurb. If you know you're in a flood zone or pay insurance, pay attention to the borough website on flood, something to mention that.
Newsletter. We do have a newsletter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to suggest a newsletter. And if you do, that's a great idea. If you have to do a mailer anyway for the tier A, yeah, that would be excellent.
And also, if we have a community day, one of the requirements is we do have a stormwater booth that, and we could have that kind of stuff too in the booth. I don't know if you want to pay me a consultant fee to man the booth, but I can give you the stuff to.
You might be having a carnival. You could do it there.
I was just thinking about that.
I could be the guy in the dunk tank, right?
Yeah, let's go with it. Yeah,
okay.
Double duty. You can take my place in the dunk tank.
Yeah.
We can put Mike at the booth when he's in the dunk tank, since all the answers have been through it.
So I believe the Environment Open Space Commission will work with you on stormwater management and some outreach things. So
please,
anything we can do, let me know as chair, or let us know.
Email me from the borough website. Send me an email, and I'll certainly, if the committee allows, yes.
Okay. One other question, and I know this is a state mandate. Can we amend, like, so we have to adopt the amendment, adopt an ordinance, and send it into the state. How closely do they look at it? Like, can we like, take, remove some things, like the cabinets?
I certainly
and stuff that you know you're
that.
Not going to force? You know? I know you'd have to do a whole other public hearing and stuff.
Yeah. Well, it gets, the attorney general and stuff get involved.
Yeah,
then.
You don't.
We don't want that.
Beyond the public
okay,
hearing.
So it has to be verbatim, basically.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. All right, thank you.
It's like cable ordinances, you know, they verb do those too.
Yeah. Any more public comment?
You know, I gotta. We gotta go to Tony. So come on. How does this affect private driveways, roads, and infrastructure type of that? If the elevations have risen or anything like that?
Not. I wouldn't say it would cause any kind of concern, other than if there are physical. Like if we physically, you know, if they change the elevation and physically the water comes up to the road, but if it is a flood area, basically, used to be we could fill a certain percentage of the flood zone. I used to be able to fill like up to 25% of the flood zone back in the day. Now they want zero net fill. So if you fill an area, like say you want to raise a road up 10 feet. Or two, you know, you want to build a, so your road doesn't, you don't get your car wet. So you build the road up a couple feet. Well, that volume has to be translated somewhere else. So, yeah, if you build that up, you may have to bowl out an area to swap it, basically.
But existing, there's a lot of existing private drives. And
Pre-2007.
It's all good?
It's pre-existing.
That's good. All right, thank you.
If you want to mill and resurface a driveway, you can do that, you know. If you want to overlay it 2 inches, I'm not going to go out and, you know, you can, it's for the record, I'll say that, because I think it's, again, it's another one of these ridiculous things that get mandated to us.
Any more public comment?
I'll keep my mouth shut.
Yeah. Seeing none, can I get a motion to close the public hearing?
I'll make a motion to close the public hearing for ordinance number 2023-02, floodplain damage.
Second.
Roll call?
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay. With that, we're going to go into resolution number 36.
So take a motion to adopt.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
After all that?
I was waiting to do it, too, and it slipped my mind. No, it's okay. That's all right. Can I get a motion to adopt ordinance number 2023-02, floodplain management, public hearing, floodplain damage?
I'll make a motion to adopt ordinance number 2023-02, floodplain damage.
Second.
Roll call?
Yes.
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 Yeah. Now, is it, yes, but I was going to ask the question, do we have to adopt it exactly how it's written, because the word damage was...
Well, no, the ordinance has its own title.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
So I just want to make, because it's the way it was adopted as floodplain.
Well,
damage.
You adopt the ordinance. I mean, you know, it's not so much... When you do your introduction, that's really becomes more of an issue, because you can do that by title, but you adopt the ordinance. The ordinance was...
Didn't want to worry about a technicality.
Yeah. It's adopted.
Okay, good.
Good.
All right.
As written.
Thank you all.
Okay, thanks, Rob.
Yeah, thank you very much.
What do you need?
We need a gallon of whole milk.
Oh, I gave him. Yeah, he's got one of his little things there.
You too.
All right, with that, we're going to go to resolution number 36, 2023, the 2023 salaries. this resolution, at the reorg meeting, we had the ordinance for the for the salaries, but this one lists the specific salaries of the individuals in the under our employ. Now, I don't know. Do you want me to read? Did I have to read them all out, or just
no.
Any discussion on these?
No discussion.
Okay. The only thing I was wanted to bring up was, because it's out on the website too now, the chief financial officer, it's not really a salary. It's a compensation that is kind of a combination of the benefits and salary.
I mean, it depends how you want to wash that. He gets that monetary value and buy
that's,
insurance.
Yeah, compensation. Yeah. That would be it. Instead of a salary itself, it's a compensation for him. And then, was there...
The committee not included in this kind of thing?
The committee's on there.
Yeah,
on there.
We're on here.
Mayor,
mayor and committee.
First two.
Oh. I'd like to raise.
There was one other... There was the payroll check, Karen, that I signed. I asked who the person was, and I think you said she was a library per diem. She's not on here.
But she could be added now. Because she would fall under the per diem substitutes, just her name is not there, but so it would be Schwartz.
Yeah, we can say it in public.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was it you're gonna amend it? You're gonna add it?
Yeah, there's under on the second page under per diem substitutes, there we actually have four, and one of the names was omitted.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, Kathleen
Schwartz.
Yeah, it's not even with a T. It's S C H.
Well, don't forget the. Right. I mean, you're putting salaries for the position, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. They may change.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so you can amend it to add Schwartz, and then you can adopt it as amended.
Yeah.
But truly, it's the position that you're creating the salary for.
Right.
You're looking for a motion on the
not yet.
I mean, to amend to add Schwartz.
Well, we could do it at the end, because there's another amendment. Fasinelli is spelled wrong. It's F-A-S-C-E-N-E-L-L-I. That's the second to the last accounts payable.
I'll let Greg know.
Okay.
We have the right middle initial.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, isn't it? Yes, yeah, in two places. That's right, because she's also recycling coordinator. And then before we talk about making the motion to approve it, the amendments, I just wanted to elaborate just for your knowledge. I'm shocked when I saw this because I haven't gotten mileage in I don't know how long since I worked at AT&T, but the rate for mileage shall be the current federal limit, so I looked it up at 65.5 cents per mile. I know. The last I did was like 41 cents, but that was 6 years ago, whatever, per mile for business use, which is up 3% because we had a mid-year actually increase last year, which I never saw. They usually do it for the year. So mid-year they had a 3% or 3 cent increase. And this is what really was interesting. The rate applies to gasoline, diesel, and electric and hybrid vehicles. So I was surprised about that because that's kind of an interesting. You're getting paid for all your gas. Well, I guess do they know how much gas they use? I don't know. So, okay. So, can I get a motion to adopt resolution number 36-2023 as amended to correct Joanne Fasinelli's name in two places, which is recycling coordinator and accounts payable. And to add under the library per diem substitutes, Kathleen, we'll just put her last name, Schwarz, S-C-H-W-A-R-Z.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second.
Roll call?
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay, with that, I'm going to turn is resolution number 37-2023, Green Acres Program Enabling Resolution for Supplemental Funding Request. I'm going to turn it over to Committeeman Schmidt.
Thank you. So we've got a couple of Green Acres open space-related topics tonight. We have a $350,000 grant in place from Green Acres from the state, and they go in a two-year funding cycle. March 1st is the deadline to reapply for the next 2 years. We currently have under negotiation assuming the committee, assuming some things that are approved later on tonight, enough transactions in what we're calling the Anthony Preserve expansion opportunities. So there are four properties that are under consideration in different states of getting appraisal, contiguous with existing open space that we named Anthony Preserve. So the total number of additional acres that are currently under negotiation are 81 additional acres that would add to the 114 existing acres that are there to create potentially 195 contiguous acres of preserved property. So that's, I won't repeat that background in the next couple of things, but the because we would use all of our existing $350,000 matching grant, which covers 50% of transactions, the proposal would be to apply for another $350,000 grant from Green Acres at the deadline of March 1st. So that's the resolution funding request. I'm happy to give more background on that.
Are there any changes to the restrictions since the last time we applied? Did they put any more onerous type restrictions on what you can and can't do once you have that money with the land?
That's one of those questions between the state statutes and the regulations. There are regular, but right now there's a process going on to determine what the regulations are underneath the state statute. For example, the state statute says you're restricted to passive recreation.
Mm-hmm.
It's never been defined whether hunting, for example, is passive recreation or active recreation. So the regulations change regularly.
Yeah.
But I'm not aware of any significant changes. It has to be available. It has to be open to the public, limited to passive recreation.
Yeah, I can't imagine hunting would be considered passive.
But it's undefined. That's why the regulations, the regulators have to go through and have public hearings.
Acquisition, you've already, because you can do active recreation, right, where passive usually walking paths, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So you've already earmarked it for this acquisition for the land as just for passive.
That we're talking about are for passive.
Yeah, the regulations, it's chapter 7 for the EP, and I forget what section, 24.5 deals with, right, 25? I'm bad for an old guy, huh? Deals with the open space regulations. So yeah, I don't remember seeing anything being amended, but recently. But it's all spelled out there.
So this land comes off the tax map, basically, then becomes preserved.
Yep. I mean, when it's open space, it's preserved. It's off the tax map. Right. I mean, for this vote, we're not approving any specific open space transactions. Those are coming later, and not the actual transactions, the process steps. This is just a resolution to apply for an additional grant for the next 2 years.
That's why it says supplemental funding request.
Yeah, exactly, because we have an existing grant in place. Mm-hmm. We don't have to go through the initial grant is much longer paperwork. This is to add to what we have based on our activity they'll look at.
Are you doing the grant writing on this? Or
This is
what
it? You have is
that's
the,
it? Oh,
the
nice
grant
and easy.
For supplemental requests. Then.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and if you got it and you found some onerous restrictions, you just wouldn't take the money.
Right.
So. Any more discussion?
So if the grant's not done at this time, does that make the next time around more complicated? Because you're starting again?
The one thing it would do is it would be 2 years before we would get more funding. So they only open up the window for funding rounds right now every two years. They're talking about going to 1 year.
I didn't know if
I don't know the answer.
Initial.
I don't know when our grant would expire if we don't.
All right.
That's it? No more discussion? Can I get a motion to adopt Resolution Number 37, 2023, Green Acres Program Enabling Resolution for Supplemental Funding Request? $350,000? That's what it was. $350,000.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second.
Roll call?
Yes.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, with that, you can go right into your Anthony Preserve expansion opportunities, unfinished business.
Yes, so the first on unfinished business, some meetings ago, the the committee approved submitting the pre-appraisal questionnaire to Green Acres for 43 Anthony Road, Block 48, Lot 76, the Tulo parcel owned by Mr. Tulo. That was pre-appraisal questionnaire was returned by Green Acres. We obtained in front of you. We reached out to three appraisers for quotes on getting that property actually appraised. Two replied. One didn't reply. And the low price that we have would be $1,400 to appraise that property by Norman J. Goldberg Incorporated. New Jersey Water Supply Authority has agreed to reimburse half of the cost for appraisal, for survey, for preliminary environmental assessment, and for the title work for all four of the properties that we're talking about tonight.
Commissioner Schmidt, he's Green Acre approved.
And they've been provided with the full pre-appraisal questionnaire, instruction letter, etc. So there would be action to be requested here would be to engage Norman J. Goldberg Incorporated to appraise the Tulo parcel, Block 48, Lot 76. I'll make that motion.
Can I get a second?
Second.
Roll call?
Yes.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. With that, okay, so we already got the, so we covered both A and B at this point. Okay. So now we're down to unfinished business item C, which is to schedule a special meeting. This is with the Hunterdon County Educational Services, and it's cybersecurity issues. I want to bring the this is going to be an executive session, bring the committee up to speed on some of our exposures in the township as we go forward with our IT needs. So we checked with the ESC, and the representative is available on March 1st. So we're thinking, now, I don't know if we're going to have a Board of Health application that night. I would like to have an hour. So I don't know if we do it at 6 o'clock or 5:30, because he can't stay till the end of the night. It would have to be in the beginning. I would prefer 5:30, just in case we have a Board of Health application come in.
I'm fine with that.
Everybody okay with 5:30?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you're going to do that in executive?
Yeah.
And Karen, you have to notice a special executive.
Okay. Write that down. Can you make it that night, Mark, at that hour? Is that not good for you? If we have to make it 6 o'clock, he can talk fast, I'm sure.
Even that's regular meeting night, the first?
Yeah,
I should be okay.
Okay. All right.
Just remind me.
Yeah, remind me. That's right, because it's important that you hear some of this stuff. Okay, so can I get a motion to schedule a special meeting, notice that meeting, on Wednesday, March 1st at 5:30 p.m.?
I'll make that motion.
Can I get a second?
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay. With that, we go into the 20. This is other unfinished business. 2023 appreciation event budget authorization. So I did some research here. In 2021, we spent $1,854. That's when you ran it, Abe, and there were 64 guests. 2022, we spent $2,021, and that's when Mr. Committeeman Wilson ran it. There were 60 guests. So I'm assuming the guest list is going to probably be about the same. Now, we never got approval for any of those amounts in those years. They just ran the picnic and put their receipts in. So that's why I want to put this back on the agenda, so that we start going back to that, approving anything over $1,000. So we were thinking with inflation, I don't know. I hadn't planned it. I'm running it with Brian this year. So we were going to do what I did was under the pavilion. I thought a nice picnic this year, and then I have a backup in case it rains really badly. I got the firehouse, so we can easily just move right over to the firehouse if that's the case. We'll know within a couple of days. And again, I the thought of doing it somewhere else is going to get cost prohibitive. I know what you're saying, Laurie, about the dance and everything, but I don't think it's going to be a good year for that. We'll see what next year is like. So I thought about, I don't know, what would you say, bump that up for inflation?
What's that?
It's getting hot in here. I don't know.
Bump it up, okay.
Yeah, should we bump it up for inflation? Do you want to, I mean, it's 2022 is $2,000 roughly, 2020. That covers alcohol, food, whatever else happened that day.
Inflation and I think pre-COVID, it was more like 75 or so people over attending.
Yeah.
The last couple of years were still impacted by COVID.
So yeah.
I think if you're looking for like an up to $3,000, makes sense.
Not to exceed
$3,000. We'll try to keep it. We'll definitely keep it below that. But, you know, it's you just don't know how it's.
Might be a shortage on balloons out here.
Yeah. Bev will be chipping in again. Okay, so can I get a motion to approve up to $3,000 for the June 10th, 2023 appreciation event budget?
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Roll call?
Yes.
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 Okay. New business. We go right back to Committeeman Schmidt for authorization for submission of a Green Acres fact sheet for 37 Anthony Road, Block 49, Lot 75.
So the committee has the map of the four properties that we're now talking about. This is a resident who we're in discussion with, Block 49, Lot 75. And you'll see this is a property, again, on Anthony Road. The Spruce Run runs, call it, through the middle of it for this discussion. It's labeled Houston on the map. That's Mr. Andrew Houston who owns it. It's an 18-acre parcel. He's proposing to draw a new property line along the bank of the top of the southern top of the bank of the Spruce Run and preserve the southern portion of his property, which is connected to the existing what we call the Fisher property as part of that, and it's in between Piazza property that we're expecting an appraisal on shortly. So standalone, it would expand the property that we have, and if the other two or three of the others fall into place, it's contiguous to that. That's why there's a whole a whole pattern that's coming together. So the first step in the process is to submit to Green Acres the pre-appraisal questionnaire. Then they look over the instructions that are given to an appraiser. The proposal tonight would be to authorize submission to Green Acres to get the pre-appraisal questionnaire approved.
What kind of questions are on that questionnaire?
I think, was it included in the packet, or was it just with mine? It's questions like the deed, and if there are easements, if there are any special...
That's a pre-appraisal fact sheet.
Yeah, this is
pre-appraisal fact sheet.
Yep.
Does he do the lot line adjustment prior or after?
It would be after. I mean, at this point, we have to... The first step is always to get a valuation, and then...
What's his reason for doing the lot line adjustment?
He's willing to create the connectivity in the open space behind them. And obviously there's a valuation. I mean, of course, you know, people sell for the right value, and this is the first step to get an appraiser to decide what the value could be.
Do we have to have some kind of resolution that shows he has to get this lot line adjustment if this gets approved?
There's no commitment to either side until we have a valuation. I mean, that
well, afterwards.
The,
I mean, I just saw what we just went through.
To go the next step.
Yeah.
I mean, I have discussed it with Gail Glasloff, the board secretary, and there's no obvious reason that this would be an issue that would stop the preservation.
Mm-hmm.
But it's too preliminary. To
right. This for afterwards. Yeah. I'm thinking ahead.
Yeah.
So. Any more discussion?
So the motion would be to authorize the submission
of
the
Green Acres fact sheet. Pre-appraisal fact sheet. Call it a Green Acres pre-appraisal fact sheet.
For 37 Anthony Road, Block 49, Lot 75.
Yes. Can I get a motion for that?
I'll make that motion.
Can I get a second?
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, with that, we have item B under new business is the police chief Jason Kranz's request to revise the police department rules and regulations.
You can stand up.
He's been pacing and he's
I'm
been going back
for
and forth.
Challenge, please.
He's sitting now.
Not easy.
Good evening, everyone. So I'm here tonight because I want to propose revisions to the police department's rules and regulations. Just explain what they are. They are guidelines outlining acceptable and unacceptable behavior by police personnel in the department. They establish rank, security, seniority in the structure of the police department. They also define duties and responsibilities of the command and supervisory positions. Obviously, chief's command, your supervisory would be lieutenant, sergeant, corporal, and also defines the duties and responsibilities of police officers, detectives, and civilian employees that work for the department. So any violation of the rules and regulations may be basis for disciplinary action. So if everybody here, I have a draft. I took the liberty of making a draft of my revised rules and regulations. So if you go to page 8, 1:1.4, and this is explaining why I'm here tonight. For the good of service, the right is reserved by the chief of police with approval of the township committee to amend or revoke any rules, regulations, or procedures, or add thereto as circumstances require, which brings me here tonight. So after reviewing the current rules and regulations, I made several revisions that need to be incorporated back into the rules and regulations.
Hold on, Jason.
Our printout is missing page 8.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking. I know.
Back in
one
back. Front and back.
It's front and back.
Seven. Yeah, no, it's not on the back.
Yeah, but it's 8, 8, 8, 8, 7, 7.
We only have the odd numbered pages.
Yes.
I have it right here.
Yours looks so darn thick. I'm saying, what did I not get here?
I have it here. Where?
Yeah, I don't have it.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, that's why you guys looked.
I did have their numbers on.
What? But ours is much thinner than what he has, unless his isn't.
What was the
it'll be page 8
article that he wanted to go over?
No.
What did he say?
Well, I read it.
5 of 77.
But this one doesn't have page 8.
9. It skips. It's like it skips every other.
Yes, I got
1.
He has
3.
That's right. I read
5
it.
5 to 7.
I have it here.
So.
Anyway, just talk.
Just go slower.
And where are we
give
at?
Give us the section numbers that you're talking about.
I will. The best way of doing this is I'm going to go, if everybody has a summary page, I'm going to go put on the record line by line of the revisions I made from proposing. Okay? So.
Oh, is this the summary page? Article 2 definition?
This breaks it down. It's the easiest way I can figure out how I can do this for you guys.
Okay.
So you understand it.
Okay.
So the first is Article 2 definitions. I added detective. And I add a lieutenant. So as I go, if you guys have any questions, just feel free to ask me. I'll answer the best I can. Article 3, organization, I reconstructed the flow chart, the chain of command, to include lieutenant, which is currently vacant, and patrol and detective. Patrol and detective the detective is assignment. So a detective is a patrolman assigned to the detective division. So that's why I added for that section. It's hard to do this without you guys not having the proper pages, but for rank established is 3:1.1. I added lieutenant to the subsection. And in the current one, that was taken out in 2020. And I added lieutenant to subsection 3:1.3 in rank structure. And I also added to increase the official authorized strength of the police department from 2 sergeants to 3, from 1 corporal to 3, and 7 patrol officers to 15. These are the numbers that were taken out in the revision from 2020. And the reason I'm doing this is because – it's an authorized number. It's not a guaranteed number. So just because I'm adding three sergeants, just because you see 15 patrolmen, that does not give – I don't – that's not a guaranteed number. In order for me to increase the size of the patrol division or the police department, I would have to get permission from the committee. If I want a lieutenant, do the same thing. I just can't go, hey, it says I can have a lieutenant and make a lieutenant. I can't do that without the committee approval. Any questions on that?
Nope.
I have a support letter that I wrote through Committeeman Wonder. It pretty much spells out everything I'm doing. So Article 4, Command and Supervisory Responsibilities and Authority. I added Section 4:2, Lieutenant, which was taken out in 2020. I also added Subsection 4:2.1-5, which is Authority, Responsibility, Education, License, Experience. In Article 5, Responsibilities and Duties of Detectives, Police Officers, and Civilian Employees, I added Section 5:1, Detective, which was also taken out in 2020. I added subsections 5:1.1-4, which is Authority, Responsibility, Education, and License. Article 6 is my next provides, yes, General Rules and Regulations. These are the two I added, manner of wearing the uniform, 6:5.4, which is on page 38. So it's draping of the badges. So what this means is to honor, we drape the badges to honor fallen deceased officers. So if you ever see an officer out and about and you see us badged with this on it, that's what that signifies. We're honoring the fallen officer. So I added that. And tattoos or similar markings. I'm not against tattoos. I have tattoos myself. But I still think we need to be looking professional manner, and it just pretty much says my officers can have tattoos, but they can't have them on their face, neck, hands, and fingers. And if I can cover a sleeve with a long sleeve shirt if need be. That's the two I added. So that's pretty much it. And So I wasn't here in 2020 when the revisions were made to the last rules and regulations. So I can't speak to what my Committeeman Schmidt.
It was
you and
Mark Hall was
and Chief Rautenberg.
And Chief Rautenberg.
So, what I'm doing, I'm trying to right the ship. These numbers, the sergeants, the authorized strength, they should have never been touched. That's why I'm putting everything back in. I'm not changing anything. Everything that was prior to 2020, I'm putting back in. I'm proposing put back into the revised draft that I put in front of you.
Well, your cover letter really spells it out.
Saying,
you want me to read the cover letter?
Let
me read the cover. Yeah, go ahead. You want to read the cover
letter?
I'll do it if you don't want to do it, because this really explains what he's trying to do.
So much to put in.
Yeah.
You read faster, so good.
All right. So, and there is a change to this, too, but... Dear Committeeman Wonder, the adoption of rules and regulations is not the responsibility of the Chief of Police, but instead it is the responsibility of the appropriate authority within the municipality, which in our case is the mayor. That's wrong. We talked about that yesterday. It's Township Committee.
Well, it hasn't been designated is the issue. Or there's no ordinance. And when you need an ordinance that establishes who the appropriate authority is. And traditionally, in township forms of government... It is the governing township committee, but...
Well, we have a weak mayorship, so... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't... And I don't want to tell you, but I looked at that. I raised the question to the chief when I looked at his rules and regs, and I couldn't find anything that indicated that the mayor was the appropriate authority.
Right. So if we have to do something... Anyway, that's... The township committee by resolution may amend rules and regulations for the governance, maintenance, and regulation of the police department and for the discipline of its members. After reviewing the current rules and regulations, I made several revisions that needed to be reincorporated back into this document, as well as two revisions that I feel needed to be added. My proposed revisions are as follows. In 2020, there were revisions made to the rules and regulations that severely handicapped the potential growth of the police department, specifically in subsection 3:1.3, rank structure. This subsection lists the official authorized strength of the police department. As it now stands, the department's official authorized strength is at the bare minimum numbers. As a matter of fact, we are currently in violation of the rules and regulations by having 8 patrolmen when our current authorized strength for patrolmen is only set at 7. The purpose of this subsection is to have rank/position numbers above the bare minimum in the event the police department needs to expand. These numbers are authorized numbers and are not guaranteed numbers. The number increase made in my revisions reflect the numbers that were authorized prior to the 2020 revisions. Also in 2020, the rank of lieutenant and the assignment of a detective were removed from the rules and regulations. Both positions are important to have as established ranks in subsection 3:1.1, rank established. A lieutenant oversees an entire police department as the second in command to the chief of police. They are responsible for managing and directing department activities, including overseeing the training of staff, enforcing department policies, implementing and overseeing new programs and initiatives. They can also serve a public information role as the department representative to other law enforcement agencies, schools, and community organizations. Lebanon Township may never have the need for a lieutenant, but in the event the department needs to expand for any unforeseen circumstance, the position is available. The detective position is an integral link in solving and prosecuting crimes. Detectives develop close relationships with crime victims and act as liaisons to other police agencies and social services. In my revisions, I added lieutenant and detective to Article 2 definitions, reconstructed the organizational chart to include lieutenant and patrol/detective, and added lieutenant and patrol/detective to subsection 3:1.1, rank structure. I also added section 4:2, lieutenant to article 4:2, lieutenant to article 4, and section 5:1, detective to article 5. My final revisions deal with section 6.5, uniforms, equipment, and appearance. I added subsection 6:5.4, manner of wearing uniform, which addresses draping of badges, which he just spoke about, to honor fallen deceased officers. This revision should be self-explanatory. I also added 6:5.14, tattoos or similar markings to establish a tattoo policy. Lebanon Township Police Department recognizes the personal appearance of its sworn uniform personnel when in the public eye has a direct impact on public confidence and thereby on the ability of individual personnel to perform their official duties. It is the policy of this department that sworn uniform members maintain a professional appearance that will encourage public confidence in the members of the department. For this reason, the department prohibits the display of tattoos/body art that are profane, demeaning, patently offensive, give the appearance of a preference or bias to the public or other members of the department that contain messages that may be disruptive in the workplace or impact productivity. I took the liberty of updating the rules and regulations with my proposed revisions. I also provide you with a summary of the proposed revisions to go along with this letter of support. If you have any questions or concerns, please feel free to contact me, Jason Krantz, Chief of Police.
I'd just like to add that it is, I know. After seeing the training schedule that the chief has up and coming at, we probably have the best police department professionally trained officers that we've ever had.
Mm-hmm. I do believe that.
Thank you.
I don't disagree with that either. I have a question. So it's mentioned expansion multiple times in your cover letter.
Correct.
You don't see a necessary expansion immediately now.
No.
Secondly, by taking a detective off the patrol force, potentially a patrolman, but more like a detective, does that mean they'll be have to hire to replace that patrolman? So there's no expansion.
No expansion.
And really, you see very little use for the lieutenant at this time in our township.
I can't predict the future, but it's there if we ever need it available. So I don't do this every time. There, it just stays there. It's a living document. Except before 2020, it wasn't touched since 2000. It's been 20 years.
So there were, just to give that color, in 2020 there were a lot of other changes, modernizations that needed to be made, and I think the committee at that time felt similar to what you're saying now. For example, there's no need on the horizon for a lieutenant, and I think the committee felt it is a living document. Let's have a very deliberative discussion when that need arises, rather than have it in regulations, which makes things easy to fill. That's why some of these were taken out. For example, 3 sergeants.
Yeah.
To my knowledge, there's never been a discussion of making it 3, you know, 3.
But by taking groups. By the revisions in 2020, that restricted me. I could never do that unless I It's there at our disposal. That's why it shouldn't be touched. I talked to other chiefs, other departments. Their numbers are also inflated. But it, like I said, it's an authorized number. It's not guaranteed. I can't.
Understood.
If you guys say, hey.
But I think it can be changed on two months discussion to introduce an ordinance to change it. So.
Well, we can actually do it different than that. We'll talk about when you guys get done.
Yeah, I was going to say you might want to get into.
We can. Well, you can. You can finish.
The point is, it
can be amended. Correct.
Difficult to change. No. And so that's. I'm just saying the background for 2020, why some of these were taken out, was just to make sure that the committee had a full debate before we start expanding. For example, corporals. That's not a committee action to promote to.
No, that's corporals an assignment.
Exactly. So there are things in here that would be then outside the scope of the committee.
If I had three corporals, I could make three without it being a patrolman. I wouldn't have to hire another patrolman to make a corporal. I just make a patrolman a corporal. Yeah.
And there's I know there's no pay related to corporal.
No monetary gain.
No committee action, but it's so that's. I'm not saying I'm for or against it. I'm just explaining why in 2020, some things that.
I'm not saying you're.
If we're not seeing it soon. Let's leave it out so when we need it, the committee has a full discussion on it.
But what's the difference if it's in there and it's not hurting anybody? It's there. We don't have to worry about that 2 months to get it back in there someday if we need to expand. It's theirs.
At the time.
I'm not saying that anything was done wrong.
No, I know, and I know.
I'm just trying to right the ship back.
The frame of mind was at the time a new committee person comes on, there's so many things to learn, there's so many things buried around. Somebody comes up and said, hey, we need a lieutenant. Look, it's ready. It was just a way to make it more deliberative. Let's have a presentation. Let's understand if we need it now, why we need it now. That's why some of it was scaled back, not to never have it, but to just make sure it came back to the committee.
Either way, it comes back to the committee.
Yeah.
Well, most of it does.
Yeah.
Well, there's a part two to this.
Right. So in looking at what the chief wanted to do, and then I started looking at things and trying to understand it. That's when I found out back in 2020, Township Committee adopted an ordinance that in effect. Rescinded the town's existing Chapter 77, which deals with the police department, and then it replaced it with basically the adoption of the rules and regulations. So I was trying to understand why it was done that way. Mike, I'm not sure. Obviously, I don't know who drafted the ordinance, but in essence, so what happened was your police department, if you look in the code now, on attention, you know, the code at the police department, Chapter 77, has various articles. It has Article 1, which talks about the establishment and organization of the department. Then it has various sections. Then Article 2 deals with appointments and promotions. Article 2 is SLEOs. And then Article 3 is appointment and promotions. Article 4 is protective custody. So by the way it was adopted, all those articles are out, and then what you're left with is the rules and regulations. And I think the better way, and I think what had happened, or the intent was to take some of the information that was in Article 1 of the Chapter 77 and include it in the rules and regs, because you can see that changeover. But I think unintentionally, by doing that, you also eliminated some provisions that you need. For instance, the establishment provision. I mean, the section, New Jersey Statute 48.14.1.18 says that a town has to, if they have a police department, they adopt it by ordinance. So when you rescinded that provision, you rescinded that part of the ordinance, so that it no longer exists. The other thing is that then it requires the appropriate authority to adopt and promulgate and adopt rules and regulations. So I think the other thing that you have to do, or you should do, is establish who your appropriate authority is, because it doesn't exist in the ordinance currently. So that's why, when I saw the chief's letter, and in some forms of government, it is the mayor. It doesn't have to be the township committee. If you look at the statute, it could be the mayor. It could be an individual. It could be, it could be the township committee. It could be a subcommittee. There's various things, but typically in committee forms of government, it's the appropriate authority is the township committee. And what the appropriate authority means is that ultimately, while the chief is responsible for the day-to-day operations, the governing body does promulgate the rules and regulations. And the reason why that is it's important that you officially adopt it is for liability purposes. And then you also have to understand that aside from the rules and regulations, the police department also has policies and procedures, two separate items, right? Because one of the other things that the chief had wants to do is to amend one of the policies and procedures. But what you should also, from a liability perspective, and I had asked, is the policies and procedures, again, while they're promulgated by the chief, that's also something that on an annual basis the governing body should adopt and approve. And the reason that is simply for liability purposes. So if there's an excessive force claim, first thing the attorney's going to say is, where's your rules, where are your policies and procedures, right? First thing. So now you want to know, and I'm surprised your GIF hasn't talked about it, but whatever. Some GIFs are a little bit better than others. So the first thing is that you have policies and procedures, and as the appropriate authority, when you approve them on at your reorg, now the appropriate authority, who's responsible for that, has approved it. Chief drafts them, implements them. Typically, I'll review them, and then you just put them on the agenda, and they get approved by resolution. So there, that ensures that, hey, you're doing it in rules and the policies and procedures are a little bit different. Rules and regulations, a big picture. Policies and procedures gets down to the nitty gritty. Talks about training. Talks about the specifics of car stops. The specifics of how you handle certain individuals when they stop. With respect to use of firearms. All the minutiae of being a police officer. So to the extent that the governing body is the appropriate authority, in the future, if I create an ordinance that, number one, reestablishes the organization, then also establishes the governing body as the appropriate authority, also then including a provision that says that they adopt rules and regulations, and then any future rules and regulations or policies and procedures can be amended simply by resolution. Then you do away with the whole having to amend the ordinance every time you change your rules and regulation, right? Then it's really hands-on. And I've done that in other instances as well. For instance, when you establish a fee schedule for a lot of in your chapter, when you have a chapter with fees, I include a provision that says that for any future fee changes, it can be done by resolution. You're not changing the substance. You're just changing the amount, right? So it's there, and then allows a quicker turnaround to allow the fee itself, the amount of the fee, to be changed by resolution. So similarly, it would be the same thing here. And since you are the appropriate authority, and since you are responsible for the rules and regulations of the department, that's a way to have to adopt it in a manner that's, it's in a meeting, as opposed to going through the whole ordinance readoption amendment process. That becomes cumbersome, becomes expensive, because you have to notice and all that stuff. So I think first question is, to the extent that you're okay with the revisions, that's one issue. But I think the next step is I have to go back and rescind. We have to rescind the ordinance adopted in the 2020 ordinance, which basically just left the rules and regulation to put the provision back in about the establishment, create the governing body as the appropriate authority, have a provision about rules and regulations that you promulgate and adopt, and then also have the provision relative to any future amendments or by resolution. Because the way it's done here, it says that the rules and regulations attached as Exhibit A. I don't know that you want your rules and regulations as a public document. And the reason is there's certain things, like, for instance, if there's an OPR request, a lot of times they are public, but there are certain things in those that may not be for public consumption, right? Same thing with policies and procedures. When it deals with safety, security, those types of items, the public, it doesn't have a right to know that, right? So we don't want that out there. So basically it just would say is that the appropriate authority shall promulgate and adopt rules and regulations in the future that can be amended by way of resolution. Boom, done. We know we have them. They're there. Same things with policies and procedures.
So tonight unless there are any questions. We can vote on what no. Jason's at all. We can't do
no,
that tonight.
No, you can't right at this
so
point.
So we have to – so
– What I – my suggestion would be is for, if you're in agreement with the revisions, that's the first question, mm-hmm. step for the committee to decide. And then if that's the case, I think Jason already took the liberty incorporating in them those revisions in a document. Okay. So that part's done. But then the next step is me drafting an ordinance that has those provisions that I talked about. We'll go through the introduction, adoption, and then when you do that, those changes will be included, and then we'll all be ready to go forward.
And the ordinance will rescind the resolution?
No, the ordinance will rescind what was adopted in 2020, only because the way this is drafted, everything else was taken out of – when you look – if you have to look at Chapter 77 to understand – like, for instance, now there's no provision for specials. Now you have specials, and the statute for specials required to have an ordinance authorizing to have specials. So, you know, technically, you can't have specials because you don't have an ordinance, right? So we got to put that back in.
So for tonight, can you craft a motion for us to vote on?
Well, your only motion is going to be is whether or not you're agreeable to the suggested revisions to the rules and regulations proposed by the chief, that it will later be part of a ordinance to be adopted by the township.
I'll make that motion as stated by the attorney.
Second.
Roll call.
Is there a second?
Yeah. Abe.
Oh. Is there a discussion before we go
if
into
if you want discussion, yeah.
There are a lot of changes. So we're voting on a lot of amendments through a whole document here. Most of which I'm completely fine with, and I think they're important, and I applaud the chief for his focus on it. But I'll be voting no because I just don't like the idea of expanding the headcount when, admittedly, we don't see the future need for it. I think I would do it when we have a closer need to it. So for that, I'll say no.
But is there an expansion?
Yeah, further discussion.
Yeah.
We're already beyond the number.
Oh, I agree. That's
a problem. So that has to get changed.
That number has to be changed. Okay. I guess I'm really focused and on three sergeants, adding a lieutenant.
Right. But I thought the issue there was so we don't have to go back and do this again. And also, we're not providing permission to add additional personnel at this point. That would still have to come back to the township committee.
Right.
But that would be a lot easier to do than having to redo this entire document at the time just to be able to make that minor change. So, I mean, if you're concerned about the issue of expanding the police department without the township committee's approval, that won't happen with this document. But I think that having the document just makes our life a little easier in the future.
Just so you can make a change by resolution?
Yeah, just make a change
right.
very quickly.
Right.
I mean, nothing will change. And we'll still have the authority to accept or deny any additional personnel.
It'll just be one more step. And now, under the new structure, I'm told it wouldn't be an ordinance change.
Correct.
It would be a vote to change
the rules and regulations. Yeah. Right.
So I'm just telling you, my opinion would be to not make it easier to expand the township in general.
Well, it would be a committee vote to do that.
Understood.
Okay, so that's a no then vote?
I guess.
When we're ready to start the vote, I mean, we're in discussion, so.
Are we done with discussion?
If
I understood it correctly, what happened in 2022 or 2020 repealed the ordinance.
Yeah,
there's two
different issues, right?
Yeah, right.
There are two different issues. I think the first issue is the chief has promulgated revisions to the rules and regs.
Right, right? That I get.
So, yeah. And the rules and regs are there, and mm-hmm. because they were adopted, right? I think we can fix that part. So the first question is, do you all agree with the changes to the rules and regs? That's your first question.
Right.
I think that's your
first vote.
Well, could I?
Go ahead.
Would it be possible to make a motion to amend the rules and regulations to vote on that? For example, if we took out the lieutenant and kept it at two sergeants, I would be prepared to vote yes for these regulations. But if we're taking a vote on these regulations as put in front of us, then I would vote no because of those changes.
Jason thought this out. I would go with what he's got. And right now it seems like
there's a motion on the floor.
Yeah, we have
exactly.
a second, so we're just waiting for a vote.
Oh, that's right. Roll call?
No.
Yes.
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 Okay.
Okay. And then you'll
then I'll
do your
an
magic.
Ordinance, yeah, yeah. And then, right.
I was so confused yesterday. I have notes, but it's like, ugh. Okay.
So done.
That was a long conversation. Okay, so next we go to new business, item C, Deputy Chief Kyle Pirazzoli, right, second annual Fireman's
Thanks
Festival.
You.
Thank you.
No problem.
He's not here?
I don't
think so. Okay. Guess we'll just have to table that. Okay. All right. Hang on one second here. Next, we're going to go to resignation of Planning Board member Doreen Bleck. After 30 years of service, dedicated service, she's actually been the chair, she's been the secretary, she's been the vice chair. She submitted her letter of resignation and announced at the February 7th meeting that she was going to be resigning. So I thank her. Everybody thanks her for many, many years of service. It's hard when you lose legacy members like that because they really have the history on stuff that's happened and that keeps coming back to us even, like at the last meeting, 1977, and Josh Rich remembered what was going on. So we thank her. And with that, we've got some appointments and movement within the Planning Board. So like I said, Doreen left.
Can I have to accept your resignation?
That's a mayoral appointment. What class is she?
Okay.
Class 4.
Yeah, yeah. That's one of your appointments. Mayoral appointment.
That's a 4-year. It was
just accept her resignation. Yeah.
Okay, so I accept her. Do we have to take a vote on that?
You can take a motion. I don't think you have to.
We accept her resignation.
Motion to accept the resignation.
Motion to accept the resignation with deep regret, but she's got a good family and a lot of fun ahead of her with the family too. So,
second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay. So with that, EJ Skidmore is going to move up from a Class 4 alternate 1, and he's going to be appointed to Ms. Bleck's Class 4 unexpired term that expires 12/31/23. EJ's had 10 years as an alternate on the Planning Board. So it's nice that I told him he's going to be a made man tonight. So that's good. Yeah. Karen Zatika is going to move up from a Class 4 alternate 2 and is appointed to Mr. Skidmore's unexpired alternate 1 term that now expires 12/31/24. And tonight I'm going to appoint Mr. Paul Gamm to Karen Zatika's unexpired Class 2 alternate 2 term that expires 12/31/23. And Paul has been in Lebanon Township for 3 years. He grew up in State College, PA, but he also spent a lot of time on farm out in Iowa with his aunts and uncles working, and it was like got to 500 acres, right, after a while. And as you can see, he's going to be really good with our stormwater and floodplain management if it ever comes to the committee or to the Planning Board. And if he doesn't like it, it's only 1 year, and he gets reappointed at the end of it or not. So would you like to stand up, Paul?
No.
Thank you for being
EJ's term.
EJ's term is now 12/31/23 this year, at the end of December of this year. Class 4.
Thank you, Ben.
Sorry about that.
Forward to serving the township.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to get new people in. Okay. So from there we go to Jan is going to do the library chair report.
Raritan River Road. The library budget, you have copies of, I think, right?
Yeah, it's in our packet.
And the expenses, excluding salaries and capital expense, have been within a few hundred dollars for the last, 5 years probably. So that hasn't changed that much. In fact, it dropped $300 this year over last year. We did add a capital expense for $1,500 to replace a sign, which I think is about, I don't know how old, probably 25 years old now, and has some damage on it. If we can repair it, we will. If otherwise we'll replace it.
What's with that wall? What's with the wall that's caved in, Jan?
That's on my list.
What, the wall?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so that's the budget, and then there's some other things that are coming up. The wall, I think it just cracked. It's been hit, and then it's probably frost heaves and stuff. It fell over again, and Warren had said it would be, even the part that's standing isn't good, and so it would have to be completely redone if it was. And he doesn't think it's necessary. So we'll talk at the library, I think. We'll either take down both of them because they are on both sides of the driveway.
Some thoughts were maybe to put a big rock there on each side where the pipe is to keep people maybe from out of the pipe. We're going to talk to Warren about it more.
You're going to talk to Warren? Yeah, I think if he thinks that that other wall that's still standing should be left, then we could leave that one. Yeah. If he thinks it's just going to be sitting there waiting for a plow to come along, you know, then we would. It's going to be up to him, I think. You know, because the Library Commission does not know if we need something there to protect the culvert or whatever's under the driveway, but we'll do what we need to do. Yeah, and he would be the one that will know. Then there's a couple of other things that we have. Carla Drum is the library clerk. She was told that the library contents are currently insured for $22,280, which is really, our estimate is probably closer to like $144,000 in materials that are in the library, books and all the media stuff that we have. Anything that the county has in the library, we would be covered under our insurance because if it's in our building, it would be covered by our insurance at the time. So we do have some items there that belong to the county, but not a whole lot. And then there's shelving, computers, furniture, and all the rest of it. So I think we'll have to come up with an estimate of what we think the contents should be insured for and then talk to Grondyke. We're looking for having an energy audit done. And I contacted the State Clean Energy Department because from what I could see, JCP&L does free residential audits, but it doesn't seem to apply to public buildings. So the state had something on a clean energy website, and I talked to them, but they said there's a 200 kilowatt peak demand requirement, and you could get a waiver to get this free energy audit from them. Somebody's going to contact me. So we'll hopefully find out something. And mainly in terms of replacing the windows. If we were to try and replace the windows, it would help if we had an energy audit that indicated that they were necessary. The outdoor sign I talked about. Oh, and then, no, I did talk about the outdoor sign. We're planning on replacing it. Yeah. I thought, oh no. Okay, and that's it.
Okay.
Does any questions?
Not really. I'll take a look at that sign also, see what we can do with that.
Oh, okay. I don't know if you. We're not planning on doing anything until the spring, but. Yeah. And it's not.
I'll be proactive and take a look at it.
Okay, good. Thank you.
The sign fairy may visit.
Okay. All right. So from there, we move to presentation of the vouchers.
I've got one. It's also related to the library in a way. From Bear Reese Engineering, several years ago. This is for services rendered through December 2020. The amount of $11,000 for survey and wetlands task permits outside of Bunvale Library. This is paid for by a Highlands grant, but it's years ago Years ago, the engineer and the surveyors and Warren met to figure out how we could address the pooling of the water in front of the library. Because there were possibility that it's a wetlands, they went through a wetlands permitting process. And last I've heard, it's been at the DEP for a couple of years in under review, and the permit hasn't been granted yet. But that's that invoice.
Okay.
Okay, I have one for Roselli, and I might not pronounce these
Regal
names. Excuse me?
Regal.
Regal.
And Lozier.
Lozero or Lazaro. Is that correct?
Lozier,
anyways,
that's pretty good.
legal services, this is retainer for January and February in the amount of $5,000. I also have one for National Fire Protection Association. This is for Gary Opcar, our fire official, to keep his information coming to him. The amount for that information, that is a yearly subscription, is $1,552.50. I have the New Jersey Health Benefit Plan, our active benefits, and our retired benefits for the month of February, totaling $59,028.25. I have one here for the New Jersey Department of Health, Veterinarian Public Health for dog licensing, $1,270.80. I have one here for the duty truck that was just delivered about a month ago to the fire department from Flemington Ford. The total for that truck was $41,767. And the last one I have is for the Stryker Medical, which was for a Power Pro cot for the EMS, and the total bill for that Power Pro cot was $24,418.94.
I have none that apply.
I have two. One is Griffith Allied Trucking for gas for police at $2,381.27. And the other one is for parts, C&M Auto Parts for the DPW. And that's $1,273.57. That's all.
I have one for the school tax amounting to $1,110,860.60.
Seems the best for last.
Yeah.
Okay. The total bill list for the period ended February 15th, 2023. Current account and trust accounts, $1,268,223.16. Can I get a motion to approve the bill list?
I'll make a motion to approve the voucher list.
Okay. Second.
Roll call?
Yes.
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 Yes. Before we go on, I just a question of privilege. Does anybody need a recess? Because we usually don't go this long. Does anybody need a break? Good?
Yeah.
Okay. Just check.
Do you need a break?
No. And I'm the one drinking the water. Okay, so we'll go right into correspondence. The first item of correspondence is Joanne Fasinelli, our accounts payable clerk, who has the please be advised that I am starting to utilize blanket purchase orders for vendors that invoice on a monthly basis or more. A blanket purchase order will appear slightly different than a regular purchase order. As an example, the first line will say something like 2023 Animal Control Services with a dollar amount. A blanket purchase order will always have a blanket control dollar amount, even if it's pennies. The line after the blanket control will typically have an invoice number and a description of the services rendered or items purchased. That dollar amount will be circled and will appear on the bill list. The advantages of utilizing blanket purchase orders are as follows. 1. The purchase order is mailed once per year to the vendor for their signature. 2. This saves on postage and envelopes. 3. The vendor will be paid quicker, cutting down on phone calls or emails requesting payment status. Please let me know if there are any questions. I'm all about efficiency, so unless anybody else has any questions on that.
Nope.
Okay. Next is the curator's report. I don't know if you want to read it, Tom. Or
I see that we have our curator here. Would you like to have a few words here while you're here? Or?
You're
going to show
off.
Better you than me.
Well, you know I'm only going to tell you the one thing, right? I'm Gina Sampaio, and I'm the museum curator. And the most exciting bit of information on the report this month is that recently the New Jersey Historical Commission has reached out to let me know that I and my associate curator, Robbie Lynn Wonge, have been chosen to receive a special award of recognition from the Historical Commission for significant impact on New Jersey history, for our research on the Carlisle Indian School and students that were sent from the school to Lebanon Township to board, live, and work in the early 1900s.
Very good. Handling the curator's report tonight. But I'd like to add one more thing. In March, they will be honoring at the museum Youth Art Month with a variety of artwork from the Valley View students and the Woodland students. So please mark your calendars that in March they'll be showing their artwork. I don't have anything else really to add. So that was our report for tonight.
Okay. Next is public comment for anything you want to talk about. Can I get a motion to open a public comment?
I'll make that motion to open public comment.
All right. Abe beat you to it, so
okay,
second.
Okay, second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Keith Galloway, Mount Lebanon Road. I'm glad that you mentioned the library tonight, because there is something I think that also should be addressed with regards to maintenance. I'm there pretty frequently. My wife's been to book clubs, so constantly back and forth. The walkway is divided into three sections, I believe. And I'm not sure, but I think it may be the center piece of concrete is higher than the others. And the gap at the expansion joint is probably more than 2 inches. I think someone might get hurt there. I think about that every time I go there. I don't want to trip on it, but I think it could be something that someone could... It's a hazard.
I'll take care of it, Lord.
Yeah. Take care of the one out here, too, because that's another one.
Christine DiLorenzo, Tudor Town Road. I have three questions regarding charisma. The first question is not to beat up anyone. It's just for understanding. Excuse me. Why did you allow a swingers club where members can engage in sexual activities into Lebanon Township?
That was the planning board. I don't know how you want to answer that.
I don't go.
That was my answer.
Yeah. Well, maybe if you read this, you might want to. I'm just kidding.
So was it permitted use?
I'm not sure they realize what was happening.
Yeah, they
pulled the wool over your eyes?
Possibly.
It was okay. Not called that. I don't want to say too much because you don't want to. I don't want to get.
I said possibly.
It passed the planning board with revisions to certain things, but those questions were asked and the answers were no. And there's another site that deals with that, and everybody knows it's out there and it says what goes on there. So
okay, so lesson learned. I went onto their website. They have a lot of do's and don'ts, which I won't get into. And what I did was I typed everything up and have copies for everybody. And I noticed on their website, and I'm going to quote this, it says, our facility is currently 7,800 square feet. We have private playrooms, semi-private play areas, and several open playrooms, lounges, pool table, beer pong, dance floor, music, and a bar. We have an outdoor patio for smoking. This is what caught my attention. Future construction will bring us to 11,500 square feet and will add more private playrooms and an outdoor space. Stay tuned for that information. Are you aware of that?
Haven't seen any applications come through.
Okay.
Again, that would be on the planning board side
of
things.
I find that to be difficult if they go that route because of the river back there. Just throwing that out.
Okay. Well, they've got it on their website. So then going forward, will you consider an ordinance prohibiting new businesses that promote sexual activities on their property?
I think we have something in our ordinances about... I know I've seen something about that.
Okay. All right. And when I say on their premises, I mean indoors and outdoors. Okay. All right. Can I pass these to you?
Can you?
They did say the outdoors was for smoking, but I guess they didn't say which type of smoking, huh?
Yeah, that's true.
No.
Now the thing that got me was the bar. They have to bring in bottled.
It's BYOB.
Okay.
They take your alcohol and then they'll pass it out to you.
Okay.
And they also offer mixers.
It's been a couple of years.
Can I pass these to you?
I don't know. Can we take this or not?
Why don't you give it to the clerk?
Yeah.
I don't want to read, then I'll have to go to confession again.
I don't I didn't go on the website purposely.
I heard Friday nights are the big night.
I don't know.
Saturdays are the big night.
Oh.
Okay.
Christine's a good researcher.
Okay.
So we're any more public comment? Oh, jeez. Mister, you told me you weren't going to.
Tony's going to close.
I still get amazed. I haven't been, I only come to these meetings this last year or whatever, and I still get amazed that I just shake my head that $11,000 for a freaking engineer to go look at some little thing that gets a little water overflow by the library, and we went down that route. I mean, that's just ridiculous. Somebody went down that route for that. Actually, it's a little retention basin. It takes the water up. But somebody to go down that route and spend all that money, it's like, get a life. Like, come on.
Just to defend that
it's
a little
just
bit.
It's ridiculous.
I wanted to fill it in, but that didn't happen.
The issue is the solution is fairly clear, but once residents have put in place potential wetland complaints, then you have to go through the whole process.
Well, the county was a Highlands with grant.
Yeah, I was going to say that was a grant. So it's
used a grant to pay for it. Your point is that
it's just
a lot of expense.
I don't know why it took so long to pay the bill, but I don't know what's that about.
I'm not sure.
I asked that, I think I could read your memo if you
what's
want.
What's up?
He's asking what I asked the same questions, like what took so long that it's going on three years.
I'm not sure what took so long, the way it hit. During COVID and everything.
Oh,
like
it was COVID. Okay, yeah.
I think they lost
COVID
it.
COVID was, it changed all everything.
Yeah, it was right in there and then.
So, the township attorney, thank God we have a new one. Oh, I got the cover. God.
You're going to make me blush. That doesn't happen.
for the whole police debacle with the resolution or taking the old one out and not having new and having all these things in place. I worked for a large town and it's all the regulations, all that stuff and the resolutions and all that go with that. So we've been basically, as he mentioned, with all the liabilities, we've been very exposed, and thank God we haven't some ambulance chaser out there didn't take advantage of that. So take your time. There's a lot with all those procedures and everything that's in there. And I'm sure the township attorney will do it right and go through it, and we can put it to bed.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is just, that's another, like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, he was worth his weight in gold on that call yesterday, let me tell you.
The biggest thing that a lot of big lawsuits are is police promotion criteria. So just go through the whole thing, A to Z. Take your time in doing it because it's going to take a little bit of time.
Mm-hmm.
So don't piecemeal it. Just go through it all.
No.
And there's a lot of resources out there.
Because
this has been done 100 times, 1,000 times over. So there's a lot of resources. Mm-hmm. Let me move on from that real quick. River Road demo. I think it's River Road over there. Last year it got demoed. Tewksbury Township, if I have the name right. Tewksbury Township, the building official did an unsafe building. Tewksbury Township paid half of it. We paid the other half. That's hopefully done and over with, which leads me over to why this Tewksbury is still paying for half, if it's still that way and it hasn't changed. Let's get going, and there's a lot of things going on with the new administration, a lot of things that have to get caught up on, hence the police, all the police stuff and everything else. These things just keep popping up. And Little Brook, it's an environmental hazard. It's probably, I'm sure it's in a floodplain. The house has been sitting there for 30 years. It's like, what are we doing here? We got Green Acres money. I think, Mike, can we use Green Acres money to acquire that land and rip the building down? Potentially?
Not to rip the building down, but to acquire the land.
Okay.
But what about Blue Acres? Wouldn't that
I don't
be?
Know.
Yeah.
So the owner is a church. They inherited it, but I already spoke to the attorney. Going through all that. So has Mark been updated on that?
I have.
Okay. And hopefully that process is working.
It's going forward.
Thank you. So that's the main thing. Make sure it doesn't fall in between the cracks and it moves forward. Because there's to resolve it isn't rocket science. You just got to get it done. Mm-hmm. And there's probably other properties that maybe need to look at. None that I'm really aware of, but we got to keep after this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want my kids to have to listen to this to deal with it down the road. And then again, the new engineer, I'm impressed with his comments and stuff, and I think perhaps something might have went a little different over there at the library, who knows, but thank God you got rid of him too, and I hope all the boards get rid of him, because he's an embarrassment. And I hope Sharon, as the chair of the Environmental Commission, in their mission statement, it has to investigate environmental problems and propose solutions. I hope part of their new chairman over there and everything, chairperson over there, that they can start looking at that and looking at things. And Little Brook should have been right on top of the list and some of these other places, wherever they exist. So that's part of their mission statement, and hopefully they can look at their mission statement and go down this road and take care of these things. And that's enough.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other public comment?
Patricia Darcy, 21 Anthony Road. It's really more of a question about enforcement of ordinances. I was at the planning board meeting last week. I was kind of dismayed by what I heard at that meeting, that there was an ordinance, I think it was called an ordinance, from 1977 that hadn't been upheld. And I was actually dismayed at the decision made by the planning board about that ordinance. But can you tell me who was supposed to enforce that? And for those of you that weren't there, there was a property back in 1977 that I guess was in foreclosure, and the planning board ordered, I'm not sure if that's the right word, but said that these two properties had to merge together to become one property. But that was never enforced. And someone purchased recently one of these properties and now can't build on it because of this ordinance. And so my question is, what's going to happen? Who's responsible for that? Is that the township committee? Is that the planning board said it wasn't their responsibility to enforce? So whose responsibility is it to enforce? And has that committee or person been informed that that ordinance is going to be upheld? So therefore, those two properties must be merged into one now.
I think you're trying to say resolution.
Resolution.
The problem is it can't be merged into one now because it's two different owners and you can't force it.
I guess that's my question. Who is the enforcer of that original one? Who has been not enforcing the resolution for 40-plus years?
I'm not exactly sure. It may have been the zoning officer at the time. But and also it was the bank that owned the property. So you can't force the bank to do anything.
So based on that meeting, based on that meeting, like it was clear to me that we're going to get sued again because somebody dropped the ball and now there's a property owner who can't do anything because it is one more. Yeah, I was thinking the whole time that, you know, this is just we're guaranteed to get sued again based on what I heard at that meeting. And the questions that I heard, because someone has purchased this property. I'm sure he did a title search, and there was nothing from the township that said, oh, by the way, this property is supposed to be merged with another property.
Well, I don't think the township has a requirement to say anything about that.
Well, but if there's a resolution saying that these properties had to be merged, then how,
well,
like what I'm saying, somebody dropped the ball.
It was up to the homeowner to merge them. He elected.
So you're saying there was fraud?
No, no. I don't know the details. I take it there was an application.
What kind of an application?
In front of the planning board.
No.
No?
What came before the planning board was a request by the new owner of the property for the planning board to rescind the 1977 resolution because of changes that had occurred over the last 50 years, and that the purpose of the resolution was no longer appropriate.
Right, but I'm saying the resolution back in 19, I'm talking going
that's
back
the
to
one the, I'm talking about.
There was an application made back in 1977 by the property owner.
No. The issue at that point in time was the property was approved for four lots.
Okay.
Okay. But the road was a Class 1 road. And in the Class 1 road, you can only have three lots.
Okay.
So the resolution said that if you wanted to figure this thing out, merge two of the lots,
right,
and you'd have three lots.
Correct. Right.
That was what the resolution suggested.
So, right. So just because the resolution, the planning board adopts a resolution with their requirements, and those are the conditions, that would give, and they're there to develop, doesn't mean that a property owner or the applicant has to do it. There are a lot of approvals out there. I know it, whether in this town or any town, where people go in, get an approval, and never act on the approval. All that means is there's an approval, and depending on some towns have ordinances. For instance, if there's a use variance, the use variance goes away within a year. And there's case law out there about what's the life of an approval. Some towns have ordinances that if nothing's done with an approval within a certain amount of time, the approval goes away. But typically, the approval runs with the land. But you're not, as long as the property owner got the approval back in 1976 or 77, apparently they never tried to build the other, right?
Right.
They don't have to build.
The owner wants to build.
That they're two different issues, right? So, but to the extent that what happened back in 77, whoever that property owner was at the time, the planning board just said, hey, if you want to do it, you can only do three lots, not four, merge the one. Well, he opted at that point, obviously, not to do it.
That was the bank, actually.
Well, whoever, I'm just saying, right? So that's out there. And then I guess at some point they started selling off the lots.
He went through a bad divorce. Yeah. As part of the divorce, his wife got the lot.
Yep.
Okay. And then she sold the lot to this individual who wants to build on the lot. But there's this existing issue of the that resolution that you cannot build on the fourth lot. So the request was that we remove the criteria for that fourth lot, to remove the criteria for merging the lots so he could build, because the original resolution was based on the fact that the road that existed at the time could not accommodate the fire trucks.
Right.
Okay? However, things have changed mm-hmm. in 50 years. They're putting in a cul-de-sac, and he had a letter from the fire marshal that the current crop of vehicles can make it in there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no reason to continue maintaining that requirement given the change over
right.
50 years. And that's where it stood. But the planning board maintained that resolution.
And I'm pretty sure you're going to get sued over that.
I'm pretty sure we'll get sued, too.
I think the only case that we know is if they sell the property back to the man, they don't sue.
I think that might be going on. I think those kinds of discussions.
So I guess my question, though, is, like, who is supposed to enforce any of these resolutions?
There, you don't. I mean, again, there's an approval for whatever the approval is. The only time there's going to be resolution compliance is if, in fact, he took action, if he was going to build. But the property owner didn't do anything. You can't force someone to merge a lot if they chose not to merge a lot.
You're missing some of it there.
Yeah. I'm just saying, but that's the option of the property owner, the applicant, right? If I get a site plan approval, the town can't force me to go ahead and build. It's not within the purview of the township. You just get your approval, and that gives you the right to do what you need to do. But doesn't mean that you can't force the person then to do it.
But he wants to do it.
Those are different issues. But I'm talking relative to an approval for an application in front of a planning board. Right? Just because the question was, how come no one forced the person from back in 1977 to merge that lot? So it's only three lots as opposed to four. Well, you can't force him to do it.
But now you're forcing the other person to not build because of that.
Well, that's a different issue. Those are two different unrelated issues. They're related but unrelated.
Buyer beware.
There's something to say for that.
Yes. Buyer beware. He knew what he was getting.
But isn't the town
keyword divorce
culpable at all then?
I'm not going to comment on the township's culpability. If the fact that the applicant filed an application and the planning board acted and he disagrees with the opinion, then he appeals the decision. And that, you know, that just goes to...
I'm not talking about that part. I'm talking about the 40 years of not...
That goes back to my initial... Because you get an approval doesn't mean you have to act on that approval. Somebody can come here and get an approval to build a whole housing development and never build it.
It wasn't an approval, though. It was telling them that the two had to be merged.
If they wanted to build.
Oh, if they wanted to build.
Right.
Was that in the resolution? If they wanted to build, they had to merge it to?
That was part of the ordinances of the township.
At the time.
Because of the road.
The road. I know.
You can only do three lots.
Right. So they were following what the ordinance was, and that's what the requirement was if he was going to build. But he didn't build. So.
The other one.
No.
He did build.
No,
He built, but his wife divorced him, and his wife got that lot. So technically it was no longer part of my fourth property. I think we're getting into too much of it. We can't turn it into this.
We don't have a good answer. We're not the planning board, so.
Yeah, we're not. And
two of you are on the planning board.
Well, yeah.
It concerned me. Like, I was very concerned leaving that meeting that things weren't being done properly.
More may follow.
I say that nothing is enforced concerns me as well.
No, it's not what I said.
There's no enforcement.
That's not what I said. There is no requirement to enforce an approval. Approvals are just that. Whatever the planning board rules, the only time they have to do it is if they decide to take the action. So that's it. But because you have a resolution by the planning board that says X, it doesn't mean you have to do X. That's the difference.
If there's any case where you have to perfect a subdivision, then you got to do it.
All right, that's closest.
Yeah, okay.
Close it up.
I'm just going to reopen it for clarification. I believe the resolution said he was not allowed to get his CO unless he merged the lots and he got the CO. That's where the issue is. Just wanted to clarify that. Sharon Petzinger, by the way. Hi.
But not on the lot that isn't built yet. There's an empty lot there.
No, but he was supposed to...
You get a CO on a house.
...merge both lots to get the CO on the house of his other lot that he had a house on. I believe that's what the issue was.
That he lives in.
So he got the CO and didn't merge the two lots.
Yep.
That's the issue.
You got a sense? You don't have to
Okay. So, all right. I want to make the last public comment before we get the motion to go into executive session. Please come up and take one of the that you're probably dying to have, Oreos that have the seal.
Do this orderly and fast.
Yes.
Get yours while it lasts.
Quickly. Quickly.
I'm making a motion to close the public session.
Yeah.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Yes. Okay.